Starship Rocacha with Anna DeVlantis. Offer another day of broadcast insolence.
This Omarosa thing is so juicy.
Oh, God.
It just is.
You know, all right. I got so much to say.
I know.
I don't know where to begin.
I just wish it weren't about our White House and our top level of government. Otherwise, it would be super hilarious. I mean, there's an important point and part of this that is so concerning among the hilarity.
Well, here's what I'm concerned about. Omarosa, when she sprung to national prominence a decade and a half ago on The Apprentice,
right,
became one of the most hated figures on television,
mm-hmm,
right? She was mean and conniving and backstabbing,
yes,
and undermining. And you would see her, you know, as a reality TV bad guy. She was perfect.
And she didn't seem like the type of person who, like Kristen Cavallari says, well, they edited it to make me seem that way. You didn't get the sense that she was anything other than that. There was no way to edit that.
Well, I kind of think Kristen Cavallari is too.
But maybe.
These are people who chose the path to reality fame is one in which you have to be, the villains are the great stars of reality fame. People don't really remember the good people, but
that's
they remember
true.
the Beccas of the world and
mm-hmm.
the, you know, like when there's always some weird thing that happens. So she was that. She was, you know, kind of patient zero of reality television bad guys. And you just kind of thought, well, I don't know, does she know she's doing that, or are they just taking advantage? The producer's just taking advantage of people who, you know, there are people like this in your life you've met that, you know, always have trouble. They have a nasty word for everybody. They're always they're always trying to backstab, connive, get around people.
Mm-hmm.
They don't, it's about them first. And you just never think that cream is going to rise to the crop.
Top.
Top. Mm-hmm. And here's what we have. We had her ending up in the White House, in the highest paid job in the White House.
That's right.
You stopped and you thought to yourself, well, maybe there was something about her. Maybe the whole thing was an act. Maybe she got it. Maybe she's super smart. Maybe this whole thing, you know, she's gone off and done all these fabulous things with her life.
Mm-hmm.
But she hadn't. And the thing is that, as it turns out now, we have learned the only reason the president hired her was she was one of the few African Americans he knew, and she said nice things about him.
She was loyal, and it seems like he made quite a few hires based on the loyalty or the perception of loyalty.
Well, he's tweeted it today. She always said nice things about me.
That's a big part of it, the loyalty picture.
I mean, that's always, but loyal and saying nice things about you are two different things.
But she went out there and defended him against a lot of things that seemed indefensible.
You'll
see the president will ultimately be right on all these things and you'll bow down before him.
Well, it wasn't that you'll be right. He'll win.
He'll win.
And you'll bow down
right.
before him. There's a big difference there. The difference is that it's not that he's right, it's that he's powerful. And we must give in to him because he is powerful and follow him. And that's what she was saying. And then for her to turn, I mean, there's no shock, there's no surprise to any of this that she would. I mean, well, come on, we know what we're dealing with here. We know what we're dealing with here.
Yes, this one's pretty clear.
She is just a wretched human being. I mean, there's no other way to put it. And so now he is, and the fact that he chose her to be this close into the circle says a lot about him, too.
Uh-huh. Well, that's the thing, is that, you know, you think if he brought her on the team, she could be sort of an ancillary player and maybe do the African-American outreach or whatever her initial role was with the campaign.
But remember who she got for the African-American outreach? There weren't people who aren't...
Detroit pastor or the Michigan area?
I think there was a guy that said he was from here, but he wasn't. I think there was an Ohio-based pastor,
okay,
a Cleveland-based pastor. There was somebody, I mean, nobody was a for-real guy.
No.
You know, T.D. Jakes wasn't showing up there. Or
No, she wasn't getting that. Mm-mm.
The kinds of African-American leadership people in, whether it's in the church or in business or whatever, that she didn't have access to those people. She had access to people. Remember, there was a guy who said, you know, he could broker a gang peace in Chicago,
like
right?
2 seconds.
And then everybody's like, who is this guy? Here,
that's
everybody's
the one,
going, right?
Mm-hmm.
So it's like,
but she wasn't kept on the ancillary. To your point, though, Rose, she was brought into the inner circle. She was in the Situation Room for her firing. She was tape recording the president on multiple occasions.
Yeah. Now, that's the other thing, too. I want to point this out. She was not tape recording that with her phone. This has been a misreporting all day today. How'd you get her phone in there? She did not get her phone in there. She put her phone in. It's a SCIF. That's a security communications place, right? Mm-hmm. So that she did not have her phone in there. What she brought in there was some other, I'm going to guess, a pen, because these are very easy to get. Mm-hmm. You buy them on the internet. You buy them in stores. It's a pen that records, and it looks like any other pen. I'm going to guess it's that or maybe a body device. But you hear him so clearly, it's almost as though he's on the microphone. So she had to get something really close to him, to John Kelly. So I'm going to guess it's that. But it's something. Right. Or maybe she had a recording device in her portfolio, whatever she was carrying in there with her.
Yeah, she's very careful when she answers the question about how she did it. You saw Savannah Guthrie's interview with her on the Today Show, and she dodged that. So if she didn't just fess up and say, hey, yeah, I brought my phone in. She was very creative in her answers around that kind of thing.
But she was willing to do that. So that tells you a lot about her, too.
Well,
no, I don't deny it. I don't know what's true and what's not. I don't deny that. I mean, I can guess. I'm predisposed to believing her about this when I was predisposed to not believing her about anything else. So when she was telling me that everybody's going to have to bow down to Donald Trump and he knows all the answers, he's great, I didn't believe her then. And now that she's like, well, he's a racist and he's crazy and he's demented and he's all these things, then you go, well, maybe it could be, because it's all based on what you bring into it. But so what I'm going to do is I'm going to throw that out. Mm-hmm. You know, sometimes the high and the low score, mm-hmm. you have to throw them out.
You got to.
That's just what I'm going to do.
Yeah,
she's both
fair.
The high and the low score. I'm throwing her out. I'm not interested in anything that comes out of this.
Mm-hmm.
Although we will play some tape. And then she recorded the president. She records the president.
Yes.
Don't they have a device that figures out that he's being recorded?
Well,
isn't that the whole point?
There's a CIA analyst, a former CIA analyst, who weighed in and said that it's a system based on trust, that it isn't that difficult to sneak a recording device into the Situation Room, but the public servants should not want to, because they know the rules and it shouldn't ever be done. Plus, it can be a crime if you ever use that for any kind of personal gain.
Yeah, well, and this may well be the case. And then the non-disclosure agreement, we'll get to that a little bit later on. That's a great story, because you can't, these people are, by law, cannot sign a non-disclosure agreement, a civil non-disclosure agreement. Mm-hmm. If it is based on their security clearance, secured information, that's separate. That's, everybody understands that, right? Secret information. Mm-hmm. But a non-disclosure agreement in the White House, by its nature,
right,
that you can't, if there's something going on in the White House that you have witnessed and you can't tell about it, that is of historic value, that's part of your First Amendment rights.
Mm-hmm. That would be protected.
That is a totally, you know, just to protect an individual, it's a totally separate thing. All right.
We have so
by.
Much to get to there. Oh, gosh.
Oh, my God. Ben Bradley is standing by. Ben? Stand down. We'll get to you right after we check with Judy what's coming up at the bottom of the hour.
The McCain National Defense Authorization Act. Trump signs it, but leaves out the name McCain.
Here is Violetta.
Then there's this Tom Skilling, celebrating 40 years as Chicago's very own Take a Look Back, as WGN-TV honors Tom tonight on WGN-TV News at 9.
Keep listening. After 4:30, your chance to win a pair of tickets to Billy Joel at Wrigley Field, September 7th. It's his fifth consecutive year playing out sold-out shows at Wrigley. It all starts at Cubs.com/Billy Joel. Tickets coming your way after 4:30 right here on 720 WGN. Take that, cheesy radio guy.
9 o'clock on a Saturday. Yes. Regular crowd shuffles in.
Nicely done.
Yeah,
nailed
I
still,
I stepped. No, I didn't. I stepped on it.
Well, you should have done 79 at O'Hare.
Rushed it at the end. Cheesy radio guy, still better than I am. All right. Ben Bradley joins us right now on the CLTV.
Good
from
afternoon.
The WGN TV News. And we understand that you're doing all the Joe Donlins on vacation.
All week. Unfortunately, his mother passed away.
Oh,
so
very sorry to hear
is,
that.
Yeah, she's been sick for quite a while. And Joe thankfully got to spend some time with her before she passed. So he is taking care of some family business this week.
All right.
And you are stuck with me on the TV side all night long.
Well, I mean, we'll put up with it.
Thank you.
For the moment.
Yeah.
Extend our condolences to Joe.
Certainly.
Too. That's,
he really is a very, he's such a fine guy. And it's an honor to have him here, because mm-hmm. he's really good at what he does. And obviously, our thoughts and prayers with the entire Donlin family.
Yes.
All right. Let's talk about. Let me just ask you something here. Did you see that there's a Chicago twist to this whole Omarosa thing?
Oh no! What's the? I missed that.
Yeah.
Her tape recorder was made in Chicago?
No, she's claiming that that Trump got so mad at Rahm Emanuel that they were trying to come up with, they were asking the federal government for help in the Chicago violence thing, that Omarosa is now claiming that Rahm ticked off the president so much he goes, let them all die.
Wow.
Listen to this.
You know, we were talking about early on doing something to help combat the violence in Chicago that we have seen rise to levels that are just unacceptable. And at one moment, he's tweeting that he wants to do something about Chicago. And then the next minute, he's complaining about the Democratic mayor of Chicago and saying, just let the people die there. And that's not appropriate.
Hmm. It's a rather stunning statement.
Yeah, I don't remember him tweeting that. I mean, I remember a lot of wacky things he did.
Well, he loves to jump in on the Chicago violence and hold Chicago as an example of what he thinks are, you know, democratically controlled cities that are, in his words, burning at different times. And he certainly loves to do that in his rallies. And Rudy Giuliani, just a couple of days ago, the president's personal attorney, actually had a couple of tweets on the topic. One, he's praising, thank God, for State Rep. LaShawn Ford for saying, unlike Mayor Emanuel, Chicago's not a Trump-free zone. He invited the president to help. The mayor and PC, which would be police commissioner, here it's a superintendent, he's saying maybe the mayor and police commissioner could ask for the president's help. Aren't human lives bigger than political egos? I mean, so think of that statement. Think of that statement. It's, well, the mayor should get down and beg Trump for help, essentially.
Yeah.
Then aren't human lives bigger than political egos?
And that it assumes that he has some sort of magic wand or the answer.
Right. And in fairness, the Trump administration has added some resources via the Justice Department to help. Both through the U.S. Attorney's Office as well as through some federal law enforcement task forces. It's kind of difficult, though, to really get your hands around, how that directly impacts the fight on the street. We have seen the feds making more cases for things like gun trafficking, possession of guns. We've also seen the feds jump in and make federal cases out of carjackings as opposed to a local case.
But
that's been a tactic that's tried periodically over the years because not only can federal time be longer, but also there is a thought that it may be more of a deterrent because
takes them out of the community.
Yeah, they're not going to be serving their time with a bunch of their friends down in Stateville.
Right, or away from their families, too. They can come visit them because they may be in states across the country.
Right.
But it is an interesting problem the federal government can certainly have some impact here, but it is that in and of itself is not the bullet. The carjackings, they're not going to pick up that many cases. The federal prosecutor's office isn't that big in the Northern District of Illinois, the U.S. Attorney's Office, that they're going to be able to fill up. There was carjacking downtown last night.
I talked to a guy who works carjackings at the federal level, and he was trying to explain to me, what type of resources perhaps the FBI could bring to a local carjacking case. Because right at its heart, oftentimes these are gang members who are quickly stealing a car, using it in a crime, then getting rid of it. So you would think, boy, there's not that much science behind it.
Mm-hmm.
What federal perspective could be lent? One of their strategies is to really get behind the patterns, right? Like, are we seeing specific gang factions that do this more often than other groups?
Mm-hmm.
Where is it happening? Is there
the predictive
trend?
Analytics?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, so that's some of the expertise that perhaps the feds can lend.
Okay.
Well, welcome that kind of help.
What else is coming up on your news throughout the night?
Well, we are covering the latest words out of Omarosa's mouth and the president's latest tweets. John Lewis will have that. Eric Rung is up in Villa Park with an interesting story. A woman contacted me. She found a wedding ring that appears to date back nearly 70 years. You found it at the Walmart there in Villa Park, reached out to the store, uh-huh. also to local police, said, hey, how can I put somebody back in touch to let them know I have this? I didn't get very far, so we're going to show you that ring. It's got a special inscription on it.
Oh.
We're going to try to help reunite that ring with its owner. So Eric Rung will have that story
for
you.
What a beautiful story.
Very
I hope that works
interesting.
Out.
Ben Bradley.
Anna, we are all about the beautiful stories
helping
here
people.
At WGN.
I like that. It's not all.
Sure you are.
Terrible
all right.
news.
Thank you, Ben. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Anna.
Bye, Ben.
Bye.
Thank you.
Wait.
Thanks for being
Wait,
you. And thanks
on.
For filling in for Joe Donlan.
Wait, what? Judy's got the WGN News being brought to you by Townstone Financial. Goodbye, Ben.
Bye, Anna.
Just when I thought America couldn't get enough of Omarosa, we're getting too much. It's an Omarosa overdose.
Overload.
Yeah.
It's she like, said she has more tapes, too.
Oh, God.
Many more. And Jared and Ivanka included.
Oh! And you know what? I believe her. Damn it! I believe her. I think she probably does.
She says they were saying on those tapes how badly they felt and didn't know this was coming, and she thinks they're part of the big scheme and lie. To
how they didn't know what was coming.
That she was going to be fired. That Omarosa, just the same
this
thing.
This isn't really about her. We all knew she was going to be fired. I mean, she would be the most likely to be fired person in the White House.
Yeah.
Been fired on the Apprentice, as the president pointed out. She'd been fired on the Apprentice a number of times. Right? So why wouldn't you fire
on the in those games some people are playing to see who's next in the president's structure of government?
Yeah.
She was pretty high on the odds are pretty big on her.
Yeah. Yeah.
But anyway, she plans to release these tapes, you know, drip by drip as she tries to sell her books. So she's got Ivanka and Jared, she says, on tape, she's been telling friends and associates, sort of trying to get it leaked out that, hey, this is coming, this is next. Oh, brother.
Well, what's interesting is that she's like bringing a gift to every major media appearance she's doing.
Mm-hmm.
Right? She did NBC yesterday.
Meet the Press. She first launched some of the audio to prove that it existed.
And then back to the Today Show where she dropped more audio today. So where is she heading tomorrow? Is she going to ABC tomorrow?
Oh, that's a good question.
This keeps her out there. Mm-hmm. See, this keeps every day that she can drop one, gets another national appearance for her. This is an unconventional way, but apparently very effective way, of prosecuting a national media tour. Is that if she has all of this that she took with her magic recording pen, then she's got, God knows what she's got. Because the Trump thing isn't even all that. Can we just quickly play the Trump piece? Because it's just amazing how you hear him so clearly lying to her. Oh, I didn't know anything about it. Oh, it's sort of like, oh, I didn't know you were having a party. You know, it's that kind of a thing. Oh, sorry I couldn't make it.
Not too convincing.
Omarosa, what's going on? I just saw in the news that you're thinking about leaving. What happened?
General Kelly came to me and said that you guys wanted me to leave.
No, I nobody even told me about it.
Wow.
Nobody, you know, they run a big operation, but I didn't know it. I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Damn it.
Yeah.
I don't
Damn
love
it.
You leaving at all.
Yeah, but that's like your boss all the time. That's like, oh, you know.
I don't love you leaving at all. What? Now, what? I mean, what does that mean? I don't love you leaving at all. I don't love you. Who says that?
It's pretty clear that he would have known, at least gotten a heads up. But don't you remember, Ro, we interviewed Anthony Scaramucci last week on this very program, and he told us that John Kelly was creating a new order within the White House, and he was showing up and getting rid of some of these Trump loyalists who he didn't think were able to play by the rules, or, you know, known to be rogue players.
Yes,
I just like how cutthroat John Kelly was, too. He's like, no, not negotiable.
Yeah. He said, I'd like to see this as a friendly exit, or, you know.
But he does threaten her.
But then he threatens her and says, we hope we don't have to go get legal on this. It could be ugly for you. There are some significant legal issues.
And but also, and your reputation. He threatens her reputation. All right, Philip Bump, who is with the Washington Post. He happens just to be the, no big deal, but Washington Post national correspondent.
The guy.
So, Philip, obviously, I think it's not a surprise around D.C. that Omarosa is no longer in the White House or was fired, you know, from the White House. But recording in the White House, I think that's taken a lot of people by surprise.
Yeah, I mean, I would say that it is taking people by surprise that someone who worked for a White House in general would record private conversations, including in the Situation Room. But I think that surprise is lessened somewhat by the fact that this is Omarosa and this is this White House.
That's true. Okay, yeah, that is all true. But I guess if you know, if the president isn't already worried about what's coming out of the Manafort trial, or what does Robert Mueller have up his sleeve, or what did Michael Cohen tell him, or, you know, oh, what is Roger Stone going to do? Now he's got to worry that what did I say in front of Omarosa because she had a pen that was recording me, or whatever it was.
No, it's very true. But, you know, keep in mind that so much of this is a creation of the way that Trump manages the White House, right? There was a story that I think will get more attention as we sort of move forward here, but there was a story that came out during the campaign that when Donald Trump's lawyers would meet with him, they would meet with him in pairs because otherwise it would be Trump's word against the lawyers, and Trump would misrepresent what had actually happened in the conversation, right? So Donald Trump is notorious for changing his story after the fact, which obviously we all know at this point. But it is to the point that people who met with him, people who worked in the White House, people who worked at the Trump Organization, like Michael Cohen, would record their conversation so that they could probably go back and say, actually, that's not true. Here's what actually happened. So this was a precedent that was set almost certainly in part because Donald Trump himself wasn't necessarily a trustworthy narrator about what.
Oh, Philip, please! That's the president of the United States. I mean, right? You can't. It. Sometimes he changes his story in the same sentence. You've seen him right. Do it, right? And you have this moment now. And this is such a strange. You know, Omarosa was just such a strange figure to place in the White House in the first place. Mm-hmm. And you start to wonder how it is that all of this happened. People will often say that really Donald Trump became president unexpectedly. You know, I mean, he didn't expect it, despite what he was saying about it. And I, the more you saw the early staffing, the more you saw what he was doing there and kind of rushing and then relying on some conservative organizations to try to help him, but just on the people that he knew from the New York business community or from television or whatever it was. Mm-hmm. And then those people are not qualified to do these jobs, right? But yet they were there.
Well, this is sort of the story all the way along the campaign, was that the Republican establishment wasn't enthusiastic about Trump, all lined up behind other candidates, and then Trump held grudges against a lot of them and wouldn't hire them in the White House once he actually won the election. So you're right, he ends up staffing both his campaign and his White House with folks who may not have been the best qualified for particular positions. But that raises the fascinating alternate scenario in which Donald Trump could have not made this worse, right? He could have, for example, come out and said, you know what, I get Omarosa's bitter. She wasn't a good fit at the White House. We probably made a mistake in hiring her. We do wish her well. Whatever the recordings she's got, you know, God bless her. She's just trying to sell her books, right? There's a way to say it mm-hmm. that isn't adversarial, that isn't him making the situation worse. But instead, he goes out and makes the situation much worse, gives her a ton more attention, and not only that, has this tweet where he says that the only reason she stayed in the White House was because she offered him praise, which is just a mind-numbing thing.
Well, not surprising in any way, shape, or form, though. Right. I mean, this is
mind-numbing, yes. Surprising, no.
Yeah. Right. Fair.
Need to get you on record there. That's all.
When John Kelly says in this tape that, you know, there are significant legal issues, we hope you don't, need us to go there. In other words, it could be ugly for you. There was talk about a misuse of a government car for Omarosa. I know she brought her. She showed up at the White House in her wedding gown with 39 people. That she had this sort of history of maybe of obviously not playing by the rules, but for there to be legal issues. And that seems like a direct threat from Chief of Staff John Kelly there.
Yeah, I think that's right, and I think we're gonna see some repercussions probably for her as we move forward here, including potentially looking at ways in which her release of these recordings violated rules within the White House. You know, this thing got very dirty very fast, and the odds that this resolves deeply at this point, I think, are pretty slim.
Hmm. All right, a couple things. The other big sort of inside story today is about this non-disclosure agreement, because you've had, you know, she says, Omarosa says that they were supposed to sign non-disclosure agreements. Then Kellyanne Conway appeared yesterday to have confirmed that she signed a non-disclosure agreement, which I think took, it was, I believe it was with Tapper, right, on CNN. And he was like, wait, you did what? You signed a non-disclosure agreement? And, oh, no, I'm sorry, it was on ABC. It was with, with Jonathan Carl. And that's, that apparently a civil non-disclosure agreement is not binding if you sign it as in the White House, we're told, because that's, you can't, the government can't require you to do that because of whistleblower laws.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. So, you know, I think this is one of those things that will probably be up to a court to resolve one way or the other. But yes, the ACLU, for example, is very quick to release a statement saying that this is not something that was binding. But, you know, in a lot of circumstances, these things are sort of questionable utility even out in the real world.
Right.
Anyway, so, you know, I mean, this is, we've seen this, though, from President Trump, both in the public and private sector, where he tries to use these agreements to keep people quiet with the threat of charging them a lot of money should they say things. You know, we saw this with Stormy Daniels. We've seen this with other people as well, different sort of shape. But this is clearly something that he sees as a way to defend himself against people talking about what actually happened. I think it's probably been successful in places that we haven't heard about yet. In the White House, it's unlikely to succeed.
One other thing, too, that I think is very interesting. Politico's got this story, and Washington Post has reporting on it now. The uncle of the White House, sort of the architect, Stephen Miller, is the architect of the White House immigration program. He's got, you know, a younger guy, a staffer. I think it was Jeff Sessions' staffer for a while when Jeff Sessions was in the Senate. He's kind of become one of these bete noirs of the left right now. He's seen as like a, you know, evil figure inside the White House by a lot of the White House critics. His uncle wrote a scathing article to their op-ed piece about how chain migration got their whole family here in the early part of the 20th century, escaping oppression and murder in Eastern Europe. And that if these rules had been in place today, that Stephen Miller, the grandson, had then his family wouldn't be, you know, he would never have been able to be here and be in the White House. And is that having any kind of resonance today, do you think, in Washington?
I mean, I can't say that it has. I mean, we've known about this story about Miller's family for some time now. His family came, and they actually started a chain of grocery stores in western Pennsylvania called the Glossers. And it's actually a fascinating and very typical American immigrant story.
Right.
But, I mean, look at President Trump, right? His Melania Trump's parents, we learned, they gained their citizenship through what Trump has disparaged as chain migration. You know, three of Barron Trump's four grandparents came to the United States that way. There is a level of hypocrisy about this immigration, these immigration policies, that I think is pretty well established at this point. But, you know, President Trump has lots of ways in which the things that he advocates are hypocritical, given who he is and what he's done in the past. And it doesn't seem to have either fazed his base or in any way managed to make his opposition fall more in love with him, to the extent that any of them do. You know, this is Donald Trump. This is Donald Trump's administration. They are hypocritical about a lot of the policies that they advance, and this is another example.
All right. Philip, thank you so much, as always. Appreciate
Thanks,
it. Philip Bump, Washington Post.
Thanks.
All right, let's talk now to Judy. What's coming up at the top of the hour in the news?
Shootings down in Chicago over the weekend.
Violetta? Yeah, you think this is Steppenwolf, but I'm going to tell you something right now. This is our guest of honor, leading the way on WGN.
Get your motor running. Head out on the highway. Looking for adventure. And whatever comes our way.
That's great, Tom.
Oh, isn't it marvelous? I'll tell you, Didn't I miss my calling, you know, singing?
Oh, yeah.
No,
you
did not.
Yeah.
Skilling, was that the karaoke
yes.
Christmas?
Yes, it was. That was the bonus album you got with the Christmas album.
Great.
You know, and I the plea there was, or the sales pitch was, imagine putting me under the Christmas tree. You know, and it just, this is a Jeff Hoover production, you know.
He's the best.
He really is. He's got a sick mind that lends itself to this stuff, you know, just beautifully.
Yes, that's very true.
He is very talented.
Yeah, very creative.
He really is.
Let's talk about you, mm-hmm. though.
Oh, let's
40
not.
Years. I know this is. I know for a guy like you. I know, you know, it's.
Yeah.
I've gotten to know you over the years. This you are exactly as advertised. You are.
I know, which is tragic.
A kind guy who, you know, doesn't. That it really is about the people around you that put this together. You're constantly
who's humble,
plugging them. Yes, he's humble. You are. I think most importantly, so visibly appreciative of what you have done. And
oh, Ro, you're so nice. You know what though? Bill Snyder says he's going to have a kiss and tell book coming out.
Yeah, I'm sure.
He lays out what really goes on in this office. You know,
all the greats have a little bit of, you know, you got to get things done. Where we work on deadlines here. When the bell goes off, we got to be there. Right?
That's it.
That the light lights, the
that's
red light goes on. So we have got to. So you know, every once in a while, people will say things that are, you know, a little maybe curt.
More
curt
than
they would in normal places, but that's fine. That's what this business
is. If Bill Gates had been here a couple of nights, you know, over the past several years when these machines melted down using his operating system. You know,
would have let him know, wouldn't you? Yeah.
I would have said, hey, Bill, why not stash a billion or two and put a couple extra programmers in there? But, you know, seriously, who...
Take that, you nerd!
Yeah, really.
How can we complain? I mean, what's happened with computer technology? And
that's
the
true.
Explosion of information that's made
available. All right,
available
back to you. I'm
again. Yes,
I'm
don't let him away with this.
I know what he's trying to
shift
to wrangle
it over
away.
To the ads.
All right, what is, give me just your fondest moment or two of these past 40 years, and then one you want back.
Wow. That's a tough one because... I have had fun with most of it. I could do without the deadlines sometimes, can't we all?
Yeah, that's
but
true.
But you know what? I don't know. It's hard to say. That tornado chase thing, which I had to be talked into, by the way. You know, we went out to Oklahoma and Kansas. I said, you know, the world, that's just what they need is another tornado chase on television. Because there's one on almost every night,
yeah,
if not
but
two or three.
There's very few that actually put people with the kind of depth of knowledge that you
that's
have.
True.
Well, it was
situation.
Amazing. We had pulled over for what looked to be a little tornado roping out in the distance, and I thought, well, that's it. We're here for 4 days, and that's probably the last thing we'll ever see. And I'm in the front. I'm in the back seat, and in the front seat is Zbigniew from the Tribune, the photographer, mm-hmm. and Bizdat. Zbigniew Bizdat. He's a terrific guy. And we're driving along. I have the videographer in Steve Shore in one seat. Zbigniew in the front seat, and Pam Grimes is driving. We're going down at highway speed down this northeast Oklahoma highway. And Zbigniew says, I think we have one behind us. Just like that, very quietly. So we had so much equipment packed in the place, you couldn't look out the window. So I had to move over, roll down the window. I looked out. And here is this EF3 tornado, multiple vortex bearing down on us. We're moving at highway speed and losing to this thing that's coming down the highway.
Oh, God.
That was
there
wild.
A cow flying past you?
I know.
That movie.
That was amazing. To fly with the Air Force recon folks.
Wait, hold on. Before we get too far away from that, we have a little audio from that.
Uh-huh.
Oh, my God. Look at that. Jeez. My God. We are being chased by a tornado.
You
wow.
know, I'd always heard people say that, you know, and I felt, and here I was guilty of the same thing. So I know now exactly why everybody reacts that way. It is an amazing thing to see.
Yeah.
And we're lucky we weren't killed by that. That thing was coming up fast, and we had our $1 million satellite
truck.
And
how did it miss you?
Just went out in the field and became
rain. It missed you. It turned.
Yeah. It turned and became rain wrapped, as we say. It developed in this humongous circulation that covered this whole field out there, as far as the eye could see. And we were to drive down the highway, and there were semis flipped on top of cars. I'm sure people died in these cars.
And that was in Kansas, you said?
Yeah, it was northeast, actually northeast Oklahoma. And we were driving back toward Kansas because we had driven out of Wichita. And, you know, it's interesting. That was the day Mike Seidel from the Weather Channel saw his first tornado, too. That was my first tornado. And but
Who's your favorite weatherman?
The favorite,
other than you,
do you know what?
Currently working. I know that. I mean, Harry Volkman is probably.
I'm going to tell you the truth. You know what my favorite guy is? Is Mike Hamernick, who works at our place. I just admire what he does. I love guys who get up, and I must say, in fairness, I don't get a chance to see many weather shows because we're here.
Mm-hmm.
But Mike does the kind of you know, when I watch him. I hear something that I haven't seen from the computer models I've looked at myself. It's somebody using their own head and going beyond just the guidance, you know, and applying some expertise gleaned over years of doing this. I've always liked Mike's show for that reason.
All right.
I've enjoyed the look back at your career because it's touched so many of us in so many ways. We've just loved watching you, and I think that the Tom Skilling crying during the eclipse moment is up there in the top Chicago television moments of all time.
Without question.
But I wonder when you look at all these look backs, you know, do you see moments that you've forgotten about, and there is something that strikes you like, oh wow, I remember that now.
I do. First of all, it's amazing to me. They have these moments in the archives. I didn't even realize that. And I owe that to Pam Grimes, our producer extraordinaire here, who archives all of our weather stuff and every shoot we've been on. Gosh, there's just so much to cover. And what strikes me about the last 40 years is just the advances in meteorology. When I started, we had flow plans that leaked all over our clothing. You had, blinking highs and lows. You know, there's a story one night, Harry had put one of these flow pens, Harry Volkman, in his pocket and hadn't realized it was leaking. So he's over at the desk, and John Drury's closing out the news show. They're going to do one quick weather hit. He looks over to Harry. Here's this white shirt that is totally doused and soaking in black ink.
You should explain what that is, because you have to be a certain age to understand that weather guys used to draw on a board.
Plexiglass boards, And either had highs and lows that blinked because they had polarized light looking down on it. And, you know, the little things would blink. The cold fronts would blink. That was considered high-tech stuff.
Right. This is before the chroma key became the most important piece of
this. Right. Yeah. Right. So we had these big plexiglass boards, and you drew on them. That was the thing about John Coleman that was always struck me. He was the first guy to move away from, my first weather person, to move away from these plexiglass boards and really use color and maps and graphics.
Right. He was pulling things out of the wall, and then they were doing and they were alternating it with the chroma key, which was pretty cool. And, you know, John Coughlin. I don't want to get too far away from talk about John Coughlin, who was at Channel 2 for a long time, where he would talk to himself. They would record a piece of him. He had a character with like this guy that was like a critic of his who would be sitting on a park bench. And he'd show the guy in a chroma key, and they'd do that double thing, you know, like on Bewitched where she's talking to herself.
Where
he would talk to himself on the chroma key.
Yeah.
And they would, and it was this whole like bit that they did. There were innovators of that era as you were coming in.
Oh, yeah.
They were all, we mentioned pretty much all of them now.
Oh,
but
P.J. Hoff, the vice president in charge of looking out the window.
Right.
And
there were great characters, but you took what was kind of a theatrical and almost comedic relief to the news segment. And you made it science, and that is your contribution here. And people then tried to follow what you were doing, and the day of the weather clown, and I don't mean that in a really pejorative way, but the guys thought, we're the clown part of the show. We're going to be the funny part, right? Sports and weather are going to be wacky.
Bridge between the hard stuff.
Right. and such that was. But then you made it into something by not only applying all the modern technology to it, but embracing it and fighting for making the argument. And your articulation has been so spectacular that you are capable of selling even the most sometimes complicated concepts to people about what's happening, and you make it simple. And
well, that's really nice.
Really
Ro.
Cool.
You know, the amazing thing to me is, I didn't intend to do that. It's just that I thought it kind of interesting what was going on that was going to make tomorrow's weather, and so I explained some things that helped that happen. You know, to explain, share with others what was going on, and it really is not brain surgery. I mean, the atmosphere is very logical in what it does. It still surprises us at times, but it is it's really remarkable. You've got water vapor, and if you can find a way to cool it, you get a cloud and rain or snow. And so everything we do revolves around that, figuring out, is there going to be tomorrow and the next day and the day after that some way to take what available water vapor you've got and cooling it off. Usually you do that by lifting it. But, you know, you can turn a wind off the lake. That'll do it. Witness the fog bowl, you know, saw. And so it's a lot of fun. I used to scare the news consultants. They would come in grimly and look at me and like, say,
only imagine.
Oh, you and me both, pal.
Oh, my God.
Did
you go through that too, Ro?
Consultants that ever thought anything I was doing was right.
I know.
Did they try to, like, dress you up or something, make you wear fancy outfits or something?
No. You know what? I remember they didn't want Jetstream used, Dewpoint. That was a no-no. Nobody understood that. They said, and that's true. I mean, a lot of people don't. But
you explained it.
Yeah.
That was the point. Is that people who started to watch you, they would watch you because they felt better. They felt smarter. They felt informed. They felt safer by listening to you.
And you know what, Ro? People, and you know it. You and Anna both know it. People are not dumb. We condescended. No. These folks condescended to our audiences. And the fact of the matter is, people are, I said, why are people interested in news exposés and investigative reports? It's because there's a curiosity about what's going on in our world around us.
That's right.
And why shouldn't the weather fall into that category?
Right.
You know? And so
people watch the news to not to be informed and to get information that helps them in their life.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
That it makes them feel safer. It makes them understand what's going on around them. And then it entertains them. I mean, sports is an entertainment, so you get that. But also, you're covering your bets. I get that. But the weather is like every day. What am I going to wear? And especially in an environment, a dynamic environment like this,
that's true.
You want to know, what am I going to wear tomorrow? How am I going to be able to get the kids to school? Do I have to do this? Do I have to do that? And how does that change? Because that the environment changes you. In San Diego, you'd have been a flop. I'm going to tell you that right now.
I know.
But you were in the exact right place at
so
the right time, Tom Skilling.
It is so true, Ro. Well, thank you for your kind comments. I'm a little surprised and flustered at all this attention being paid to this 40 years. But I tell you, it has been an amazing era. And I tell my interns, you know, you guys are parachuting into a profession that's in the midst of this amazing set of advances. And heaven only knows where we're going with all this, you know. And it's going to become more and more important. Because we can see these weather anomalies, these strange weather events that are going on more and more frequently. And as our numbers grow on this planet, they become more impactful. So it's...
You need a street. And I'm not saying just a street. You need not one of those honorary brown things that they give to anybody who, you know...
No, that's right.
That sign that's got, you know, all of a sudden it's, you know, the Lefty Rosenthal way or something. You're like, how did he get a sign?
Yeah, and not even Bradley Place, because that's too small. It needs to be a bigger street.
You need a real green Chicago street sign that's your name, or they have to change the addresses.
Yes,
and do the whole
we just
thing.
Did that for Ida B. Wells. We need one for Tom Skilling.
Well, Ida B. Wells, you wouldn't put me in a category with Ida
B. Wells.
You're a Chicago treasure,
Tom. I would put
Tom.
You in I'll a category with all anybody else's name on a street here. I mean, my God, we don't know who half these people are.
We don't. I have to Google them. I'm like, wait a minute, what is that?
Everybody compares themselves to you, and you have... You, unlike a lot of other people in our business, you've actually changed people's lives.
Yes.
You've made them safer. You've probably saved some lives.
We're better off as Chicagoans because you're here, especially when there is bad weather.
Well, I tell you, now I'm really embarrassed now, but I thank you. That's look. This has been a ride, and it has been fun. I, you know, every day I love my work. I can do without the deadline sometimes, but I just think watching what nature is doing is
it's
just
amazing.
Continually amazing to me.
Yeah,
Tom, you're kind of a big deal.
Yeah, he is kind of a big deal. All right, I just want to say how proud I am to have you be a part of this show.
Oh, I'll tell you, Ro, hasn't this been fun?
It has been a ton of fun.
It has been, and it's going to go on.
Here's 40 more years.
I know.
I won't be here for it, but you will. And also, I am certain that PermaSeal is very, very, very proud to be associated with
you, too. I love PermaSeal. The folks there, and thank you, PermaSeal, for sponsoring this and for what you do. My God, talk about a service. Yeah. And do we need that around
here? I'll connect it. That's a perfect connection to you, my friend. It really is.
Congrats, Tom.
We'll talk to you tomorrow.
Thank you. I'll tell you guys.
It'll be tomorrow. I'll be back to beating you up. But today, totally different
situation.
Giving
him a break for today.
Thanks, guys. Good to talk to you.
You too, Tom.
Happy Monday, everybody.
Right. Happy 40.
Happy 40th.
Thank you. Take care,
let's
guys.
Check in now. Judy, what's coming up at the bottom of the hour?
Did you hear the one about the man and the parrot?
Violetta? Right here at 720 WGN. Steve Stone joins us, being brought to us by Let Us Entertain You Restaurants.
Well, in Chicago, I would eat at Shaw's tonight, folks, but I'm not there, so I'm going to have to pass on it.
All right. All right, I get it.
I'll eat there for you, yeah. Steve. I'd love
we
that place.
We take bets before you come on, Steve, and Anna actually had Shaw's in the office pool here. Where did Steve eat recently?
Yeah, I had Bub City last week, and I got it. I nailed it.
You nailed the Bub City last week.
But we got it. But, you know, the thing is that these are the places we go to. So it's like an easy. I was just at Bump City last Thursday.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they got great
that.
Music going there, too. Mm-hmm.
And then they also do karaoke, so.
Yeah, I did not take part in that. But thank you very much for the invitation. I appreciate it. Yeah. Hey, you know, what an interesting. This is such an interesting time of year. I was at the game last week and last Tuesday night. And I saw you, as a matter of fact, for just a second. There is an energy, I think, in the White Sox nation for what is to come. You're getting a little bit of sense, at least I'm getting a sense in the fan base, that they're watching, you know, whether it's Eloy Jimenez or, you know, trying to figure out where Luis Robert is going to be, or, you know, any Kopech, any of these guys that everybody's excited about seeing for next year. And there seems to be, I'm noticing a little bit more of a pop on the field with some of the guys, too. There seems to be a focus. Is it just me, or am I on to something?
No, I think what you're seeing, actually, is you're seeing the start of what this team is going to be. Because, you know, even in a game, look, they were getting blown out by the Indians. It turned out to be a 9-7 game as the guys came back, scored 4 runs in the last inning, showing that at least, you know, this team is not going to lay down. And that really is the trademark of a team that is close. It's not there yet. Obviously, we've got some work to do with the ball club at this point, but I think you're seeing some of the signs that that this team is starting to understand a little bit more about how to play the game. I mean, number one, Moncada's played a lot better defensively these days. Anderson has been much better defensively. I mean, that's a startling improvement for Tim Anderson. And you know, the coaching staff deserves a lot of credit working with Tim all the time. Joe McEwing's done a nice job with him shoring up his backhand, which has really been a big difference in his game. So I think you're seeing these guys, they're busting it late. They're trying to do whatever they can do to try to put themselves in a position to win. Quite obviously, when you don't have a really good baseball team, you're not going to win near as many as you'd like, but you have to put yourself in a position to be there. And I think what we're seeing from this Sox team, they're doing it a little more often. They're playing some of the better teams a little bit more heads up, not necessarily beating them, but getting to the point where they at least look like they deserve to be on the same field with them. And that's really the start. That's what you're looking for as a first or second step.
Steve, Adam Engel, I've got to bring him up because he's had 3 home run robberies in a week span.
Back-to-backs last week, Monday and Tuesday.
Back-to-back last week, and then yesterday again. And they were legit robberies. Sometimes guys jump, and they're still a couple feet in front of the wall. These balls were going over the fence. One, have you ever seen anything like that? And two, Adam Engel has been great defensively over the past couple years. At the plate is where he struggled, although he's hitting a little bit better the past few days. Where do you see Engel factoring into this long-term situation for the Sox?
Well, I think it's time to sit Adam down and talk with him a little bit about going forward, what kind of player should he try to be? And look, he's really surprisingly strong. I mean, this is a guy that was a football player. He's a strong guy. He can hit the ball out of the ballpark, but that's not his game. His game is a game of speed. If he gets on base, he can steal a base for you. We've seen what he does defensively. If he's on the field, he makes your team better because he can go get them alley to alley. We've seen his timing. It's outstanding. You know, if a guy has one catch a year where he brings one back that actually is going out of the ballpark and he times it perfectly at the top of his jump, he hauls it back in. If he does that once a year, that's good. Twice a year, it's really something special. Three times a year, I've never seen before. And that's what he did in the case of a homestand. You know, you're talking about one homestand. He made three of the best plays you're ever going to see. And he made them one after another after another. And so, but what I say is sitting down with him, understanding, look, even though you're not a small man, you're going to have to learn how to play a small man's game because your game is going to be speed. Later on, if you figure out where you can hit 15 to 20 home runs, that's one thing. Then go up there and try to hit the ball out of the ballpark on occasion. But in the meantime, you've seen when he tries to lay down a bunt, he actually is successful at it occasionally. He needs to be successful at it consistently. He needs to be able to put himself in a position by taking pitches to get a walk, to steal a base. And granted, you know, they're not going to want to pitch around him, so he's going to have that much of a better eye. But I think he's got to prepare himself to play a small man's game and then let him grow into, by body type and experience, grow into the kind of player that will swing away a lot and can hit you the 15 or 20 home runs a year. I don't think he's there yet. I think he does himself a disservice by not understanding how to play a small man's game, even though he's not a small man. But I think that there's a chance for him as he moves on. Now, quite obviously, Lewis Robert is the guy that everybody is saying will take over center field eventually. Lewis Robert has to stay healthy. If he stays healthy, his skill is off the charts. He's got a chance to play there every day and play there for a long time. What he hasn't shown is the ability to stay healthy at this point. I think he will. Yeah, I think he will. But that happens to a lot of players coming over, in this case of Robert from Cuba. They don't play that many games like they do in professional baseball. You know, in the minor leagues, you're playing 140 games. A little less if you're playing the Arizona Fall League, a number of things like that. But you're not used to playing every day, so your body breaks down. It's the first time it's happened. As you get a little older, your body starts to adjust to it. It understands what you need it to do on a daily basis. You don't get hurt quite as much. And the Sox are hoping that happens with Robert, that happens with Jimenez, that happens with a few of their young players who are currently hurt.
Yeah. Hey, I want to let's go over to the north side for a second because the Grand Slam walk-off last night, you know, it's such a rare moment. Does that, at a you know, on a team that has had the kind of success that this Cubs team has had in the last couple of years, they didn't win last year, they didn't win the World Series last year, they're in that championship window. Is an event like that, a single kind of event, sort of mid-late in the season, the sort of event that can propel a team or give it, you know, guys this confidence, kind of a moment to look back on and go, this is our year?
Absolutely. I mean, that's the best thing that could happen to a baseball team. And the Cubs have it. The Cubs believe, especially at home, especially at Wrigley Field, they believe that they're never too far down to come back late in the ballgame. And that belief in itself, when a team has that, you see things happen like happened last night with the pinch grand slam. I mean, they come back, in this case, 3-0 against a team they did nothing with all game. Best thing that happened was Scherzer ran out of pitches.
Yeah.
But, you know, the Cubs have a good team. Do they have a great team? They don't have a great team, but they have a good team. And they have a team that does believe that they can win any game they're involved in because they have a bit of a history. Now, granted, it's a short history. I mean, they won a couple of years ago. They're a very competitive team. They're going to be competitive again. Whether they win or not, that can be a product of luck. But I will say that the Cubs have something that most teams just dream about, and that is they have the confidence they can come back late from any deficit. When you have that as a team, you're really most of the way there because then you just have to execute. It sounds, you know, a little counterintuitive, but in order to execute late, you have to believe you're going to win. And in order to believe you're going to win, you have to execute late. So it is a chicken and egg theory. But the Cubs, because they did win, they have that feeling right now as a team. They have guys who believe they're never out of it. And that's the way any team has to be if they're going to win. That's the way Houston was last year. That's the way Kansas City was a few years ago. Kansas City lost most of their players. Houston is still a good team. They're not a great team anymore at this point because of that bullpen. But, you know, they're good enough. And the Cubs, yes, the Cubs can build off that situation of last night's ballgame. But they've been doing that for some time now.
The ALCS, NLCS this year, do you have some favorites? Do you think people who will be your top two, three teams in each league? right now?
Well, let's assume that Chris Sale is healthy, and I believe that he is. I think he went on the disabled list strictly to get him healthy to finish the season on a strong note, because he has a tendency, he has in years past anyway, to kind of grind down at the end. So I think they're trying to keep him healthy. And assuming that he is, they're going to be a handful to deal with in a short series. I mean, you've got him. You've got Price thrown as well as he's thrown in a long time. You've got Porcello, who's awfully good. I mean, you've got yourself Pomerantz is a good left-hander. You've got Kimbrel at the back end of that bullpen. You got some guys with very good arms. And you have a lineup that's pretty well loaded. I like Boston. I think in a short series, they're built for a short series, like I say, with that starting rotation. They got Kimbrel at the end. So that's a team that I really like. I love the rotation. You have to love the rotation of Houston, but they're not playing good baseball right now, and a lot has to do with that bullpen. They will give up the game late, and I'm kind of surprised they haven't done a little bit more to try to shore it up, although they made a couple of moves, certainly. Those are teams that I like in the American League. You know, you can't leave anybody out, because in a short series, you never really know.
Right.
I think it's a great race in the National League West. I think that's really entertaining.
Yeah.
You know, National League East is a terrific race also. I mean, I don't know, pick one between Atlanta and Philadelphia, and you're sitting there with Washington. They keep losing like they did last night. It's going to get tough for them. But, you know, you keep hearing about that locker room, but winning helps locker rooms. So I'm not that concerned about the Washington locker room. I'm more concerned about their rotation after the top two guys.
All right. Steve Stone on baseball.
Yes.
Have fun tonight. Appreciate it. Thanks. I know you're tight to get ready for the game, so appreciate you spending the time today.
I appreciate it. Take care, and I'll talk to you guys.
All right.
Thanks,
there you
Steve.
Go, Steve Stone.
Okay, bye.
All right. Let's check in with Judy. What's coming up at the top of the hour?
A plane into a house in Utah, and it's being called domestic violence.
Violetta.
All right.
I got my head about me now.
Good.
It's all good. It's
you
a Monday.
That out.
And a Monday thing. I got all this paperwork in front of me, and I'm so confused by it.
Don't sign any of it.
Don't worry.
Just check with Violetta first, and she'll tell you which ones to sign. Yes.
Right, because that's what she does.
Mm-hmm.
That's exactly right. We're all celebrating. Her parents being made citizens last week. Oh, wait, no, I'm sorry.
No,
that was
Melania.
Melania, right.
Yep. Maybe next week for mine.
same thing. Mm-hmm. Same kind of concept there. I always forget. She is our Melania. Here in America on a genius visa of some sort and then chain migrating her family here.
That's funny.
I don't know how it worked out.
Omarosa has been dishing on her now this afternoon on the First Lady.
Oh, more on that coming up after 5:30.
Yeah.
Stay with us. Stay with us after 5:30 because we're going to go to White Sox baseball at 5:30, but we continue to be here until 7 o'clock on the internet.
So, uncensored.
WGNradio.com, the WGN app, or WGN on TuneIn, however you want to do it. You get it on your device, get it on your phone, get it any way you want to get it off the World Wide Web. We'll continue to entertain, and it's a little different show. So we'll be able to play some tape that we wouldn't be playing normally.
No censors, no big deal.
Just to tell you that right there. And the White Sox are in Detroit tonight.
Great.
There, where they're taking on the hapless Detroit Tigers.
Perfect.
All right, check. Let's do this here now. What is it? It's the top five.
It's the top five on the Rokan Show.
Five.
Let's go.
Four, three, two, one.
Now, it's the top five at five on the Rokan Show with Anna Tavlantis. Sponsored by the Hip and Knee Center, where they help you feel new again.
Ready?
Yes.
Yes.
Get on with it.
Checking in at
number five.
Now, the president commemorated the signing of the National Defense Authorization Act. That's the budget, essentially, for the Pentagon.
Mm-hmm.
That was named this year after John McCain.
That's right.
But Donald Trump did not once mention John McCain.
Not once.
In his speech at Fort Drum in front of the 10th Mountain Division. An incredibly esteemed group of men and women right there.
Even when he referred to it by name, he dropped the McCain part, the John McCain part.
Right.
And he just said National Defense Authorization Act for fiscal year 2019.
But that didn't stop him from talking badly about the media.
We've created almost 4 million new jobs since the election, a number that the media in the back would never have said would be possible if during the campaign. I'm so proud of myself. I didn't call him the fake news media. I didn't call him. I said to myself, I will not today in front of our great armed forces call them fake news. We know the real truth, but we won't say it today.
Okay. That's the U.S. Army he's talking in front of. Mm-hmm. It's not just a group of those are people who are ordered to be there.
That's right.
Right. Those are not volunteers. Those are people who are paid by the United States government to defend with great bravery and great honor the flag and the people and the Constitution of the United States of America. And it's unsettling. It's unsettling. When he doesn't like it, it's fake. And even though much of what he says is fake turned out not to be, it's unsettling for him to then use his position as the commander-in-chief of all of those men and women in front of him.
Yeah.
To do that. I mean, that is so apart from the American ideal and so beneath the office.
Well, how about those members of the military? I mean, I think that you should show respect for former POW and someone who's had service to his country the way John McCain has. Even though you have political disputes and whatever reasons, he's in his dying days. This man doesn't have much longer to live. And in front of a military crowd like that, you should honor that kind of an accomplishment. It's very petty to leave it out.
Right. Yep. But there we have it.
Number four.
Omarosa.
Oh, boy.
Oh, God.
Watch out. This is a train.
Why is she here? Omarosa was on MSNBC today. Where is the CNBC?
She was everywhere on NBC's properties MSNBC today. Yeah. She was at Meet the Press yesterday and then Today Show this morning.
Right. This is on that Ali Velshi show with Velshi and Rule. To discuss the president's behavior in light of her new book, Unhinged. We must get that in to promote her book, because that's all she's doing here. But she brought tape with her, which is nice. Mm-hmm. She talked about the infamous Lester Holt interview in which Trump said he fired former director James Comey over the Russia investigation.
So was he being prepped to lie?
He was being prepped by Hope Hicks and the comms team to say that the DOGA had come up with this memo so that they could justify the firing of Comey.
So but were you in that position too?
I was not. That was definitely a Hope Hicks press secretary kind of thing. But I was really, really surprised that he would implicate himself. That's when you know someone is mentally challenged, when they would even jeopardize their own livelihood.
Well, I think that pretty much accounts for both of you then.
How about it?
I'd say.
Very similar in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
There's some similarities there.
So she was also asked if Sarah Huckabee was being prepped to lie for the daily briefings.
We would go into our prep for Sarah Huckabee's Sanders briefings, and there would be a cadre of attorneys coming in to help her formulate a response that was within the realms of legal bearings.
Is that why we see her reading responses so often?
Absolutely. Those responses more than likely are prepared by counsel's office in consultation sometimes with the campaign, sometimes with the RNC, sometimes with outside counsel.
But did you ever ask the question, why are we lying?
All the time.
I don't believe that for a second. Mm-hmm.
I don't either.
She knows why they're lying. She would do the same lying. She was doing the lying with them.
And I would say that part of it, that piece of it, when there's something sensitive, I'm sure it would go through multiple channels to define how you're going to present what you're going to say. The lies aside, the lies right. I mean, you're right. If there's something that you're going to lie about, that's worthy of talking about. But the fact that there was prep involved, I don't think is a super secret.
No, and I also don't believe she had access to most of that. They didn't. She was not a senior advisor to the White House in the way that she claimed she was a senior advisor. She was a senior advisor for one thing, which was minority outreach. And they haven't done a lot of that. And what they have done of it has been very awkward.
Yeah, that's not really worked too much.
Right? So it's not like you're like, oh, well, we were, you know, she was not Secretary of State. She was basically in a job in which there was not a whole need for anything. She was like the captain of a casino riverboat, right? That never leaves the dock. All right.
She was at the highest pay grade,
yeah,
though, but you can get $179,000 as the assistant to the president title. That's a senior staff title that carries that weight of a salary with it.
Yeah, that had, we have a lot, my own questions about that. But first, let's find out what's happening at the bottom of the hour news with Judy.
Rauner says he hopes Madigan's been doing something illegal.
And that
he gets prosecuted.
Oh, I stepped on the most important part.
Well, possibly.
Yeah. Violetta?
Don't miss Chicago Tribune's first ever night market. Enjoy food, fun, and entertainment. August 24th through August 26th. Learn more. Visit ctfoodbowl.com/night market.
All right, top five continues.
Number three.
Tiger Woods came in second, but it was the best second of his career.
It was fun to watch.
If you said, yeah, I would have a chance, legit chance to win the last two major championships, with what swing? I didn't have a swing at the time. You know, I had no speed. I didn't have a golf swing. I didn't have, my short game wasn't quite there yet. You know, my putting was okay, but, you know, I hadn't played in 2 years.
Oh,
he's back.
It's fun. It's back. We'll see how long he can stay back, but it's so fun to have him back.
Number two.
Chris Hardwick got really emotional last night on The Talking Dead because, you know, he had been Me Too'd. There was sexual misconduct charges against him, but there was a thorough investigation that cleared him.
And I want to thank you, the Walking Dead community, for all of your support these last couple of months. You know, the show is not just a job to me. This is a vital part of my life, you know, and this has been a sanctuary. These last 7 years we've been here, this has been with me through good times and bad times. And I have so much gratitude to you, the fans, and the producers, and the amazing cast of both of these shows.
Wow. And finally,
number one.
Tony Rock, not Chris Rock, Tony Rock, his brother, told TMZ that Omarosa may have turned on Trump, but the black community is not going to take her back.
You tape Trump with a pin, with a recorder pin.
Yeah.
That's some sneaky espionage Mission Impossible type. And she's trying to get back in with the people of color.
Will it work?
Oh, she's going to make us think, oh, he was on our side the whole time. He was acting like that to get close to him.
Is anybody fooled by this? Does she earn her black card back?
No. Omarosa, you're still on the outs.
Black card revoked.
Judy Pollack's News in 2.
The top five at five.
Show with Anna DeBlantis on WGN everywhere right now. The World Wide Web, all over the planet Earth. They can hear us.
Isn't that great? Hello. I feel like you should talk like that if you're broadcasting to the Earth.
That's true. Well, you can do it.
Can you really get it all over?
Sure, why not? Anywhere you get the internet.
Yeah. Wow.
Why would you?
No pressure. I just was thinking about that for a second.
But that our show normally is like that, too, on top of the radio program.
That's true. A lot of people do listen to us, especially transplants, Chicagoans who live in Arizona, Florida, all over the place.
Sierra Leone.
We're big there. We're really big in Sierra Leone.
All those commuters.
Those get right. Actually, it's people in Singapore going, oh, look at those poor SOBs on the Kennedy. Right? That's the way they look at it.
No, the commuters on the CTA, they got us on their app.
Oh, those commuters.
Yeah.
Or on the Metro.
Yeah.
They listen on their phones. Exactly right.
Mm-hmm.
That's what you got to do, because when you're on the CTA, when your heart's beating rapidly because you're just praying that you get to your stop without anything really horrible happening.
And you're trying not to fall asleep.
Right. You're sizing up everybody in the train right now, trying to figure out who is the most likely suspect to be a problem here.
You're wondering what that guy's doing with his hand.
Don't you always do that before you get your seat? You kind of do the look, you know, back and forth.
Yeah, it's kind of fun. You know, it's like a thrill ride.
It's always fun.
It's all fun and games.
Yeah.
Until
that guy comes for the third time to explain his story of how he needs $3.
I was thinking something worse than that.
Yeah, sometimes it's even worse than that. Sometimes it's the last person you expect. Like, you know, I'm not sure my radar is so good, you know, because I sat next to someone the last time I thought was the best possible person to sit next to, given the choices. And it turned out that was not a good choice. It just really wasn't.
What happened?
There was some, there was a little bit of seat fighting. This person thought that he deserved 1.5 seats and that I should be moved over to the quarter part portion of the seat.
We should all tell the worst things we've seen on the CTA. Since we're on the stream now, you know.
Oh, my God. I get it. Oh. Are you right?
I don't know.
Plenty of them if you want to start. We could fill hours with my stories of the CTA.
The guy that wants to sit in that back door section, like the back room by himself,
yeah.
never
Stay away from that
there.
One.
Yeah.
You mean at the train?
Yeah, on
That's
the train.
Me.
That's you.
That's me.
No,
I go.
That's the trouble is. That's where the trouble
really?
Is.
Really?
Yeah.
I go for that one-seater.
Yep. I go to that back corner back there.
Back in the one-seater where you're sort of blocked off from the rest of the train?
Yes.
That's the best seat.
I like to be right by the door. I like to be right by the door. I face sideways, not back or forward.
That's the seat where the guy who usually comes through the train saying, "Everybody, give me some money," usually sits before doing that.
I don't care anybody, but I'm here to sing you a song.
Ro's got like his hoodie on, his headphones in, his sunglasses.
Like, yes. You think the Unabomber is here in the train?
Is that Ro Khan or the Unabomber?
Yeah, and I'm making a handgun in my pocket.
Just to
you
scare
know,
people.
like with my fingers and my
don't
like,
mess with just, me, man.
Hey, you don't know what I got in
I'm
here.
I'm carrying.
Yeah.
Hey, do you wear a trench coat too?
Happy birthday to you, that guy.
If you can't beat him, join him.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't want to join all of them.
Yes. Then there's some people that have the, you know, especially if you are on the, if you're going off hour.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
I mean, rush hour, you're getting
a reliable set
lot of people.
Yeah.
Right? So
they're just people.
It's safety in numbers.
Yeah.
Well, and it's also just people wanting to get to and from their place of employment safely. And, you know, they're not looking for nonsense. They're just paying attention to their own thing.
Mm-hmm.
It's the late night and the weird hour.
Yeah. Crowd. Yes.
During the rush hour, I always wonder, the person pretend, like, are they reading a book or are they pretending to read a
pretending.
Book? Right? They are pretending. Because I'm like, you've been on that page either for too long or you just flipped way too quickly. And you're just looking around pretending you're not looking around.
Some overly worried guy, just like kind of glancing at everybody every few seconds.
That's
and looking
me.
Down at his book.
That's me. Looking at my book. Book's upside down.
This book's
while
great.
You're reading it.
Chapter
He's
4.
Not reading
great.
That?
I keep also a very small handgun in there. Mace.
I would imagine.
Taser book.
Yeah, nunchucks in his pocket.
I can't imagine how you could find a cleanly enough environment on public transportation to find a place
to
sit.
I don't know where to begin here, but
I know.
But I used to take the Red Line to work every day.
Okay.
And for 10 years.
Mm.
And it was too much, let me be honest. And this was in the 90s into the 2000s. So it was like
a different time.
Yeah, 80s and 90s, actually. 80s, 90s, and today. Thank you.
Oh, gee. You gave him an opening.
So the... anyway, so it was always a lot of street theater. I mean, that was the thing. And I would go off hours because I wasn't working, you know, totally normal hours. In the beginning, I was like doing mornings and, you know, your standard kind of at night, you know, trying to get to work by 8 or 9
mm-hmm.
and then leaving, you know, in the afternoons. But then I started working off hours. And of the things that I have seen or have happened to me,
mm-hmm.
I've been through an L fire. Oh. A train fire in the subway. I had a woman throw up on me directly.
And was that like a late night post-party situation?
That was 3 o'clock in the afternoon.
Oh, boy. No.
Yeah.
Start early and early.
I was sitting next to her, and when I chose, it was a young woman, like, you know, like a college student kind of person or, the you know, high school or college or something. She seemed like the least threatening human being on the train when
there
I got
go.
Onto it at 3 o'clock in the afternoon. So, I said there was the only seat available, so I sat down. And all of a sudden, she's like, oh, and then boom, all over me.
Did you
could turn to me to do it, which I thought was kind of fun.
Oh, boy. Oh, gross.
I went into that little back area once, you know, that we were talking about. It's like that one seat, and mm-hmm. then there's the area before the door between the train cars.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm standing back there, and I look down, and I saw something, you know, like something is different at your feet than you would normally think.
Mm-hmm.
And then I thought, uh-oh, because it was a different color. I thought, oh, is this a rat? And I looked down. It was a gigantic human poop. That was.
I told you that's where the trouble happened.
Right, that's where. Oh. And you figured that it was just a guy who went back there and was like, hey!
Oh. He thought that
I
was
can't
the bathroom.
Sing a song, I'm going to go poop!
Oh, gee.
Can you put some music on and also you relax?
Oh, that's horrible. Well, my baby saw her first drug deal on a Green Line train into the city because they passed the drugs over her stroller, and I'm not kidding you. And multiple times.
Sorry, we dropped a little bit, man.
There
can you help
a few
us fish
customers.
That out?
I was like, guys, can I move that, please? Can we not do this over the stroller? I mean, you know.
Excuse me.
But I didn't say anything because you don't. You're just like, okay, that's normal. No, it's not. It's not normal.
And then the guy, when you're standing there and it's kind of crowded, but not crowded enough for him really to be that close to you. I'm like, dude, there's another area you could stand. Move over.
That was a wild story, Violetta.
Really well done. Yeah. That's the worst thing ever happened.
Yeah, that was way worse than Rose stories.
Somebody standing next to her. All right, so I'll tell you this. So the fire story, though, is the one that still to this day
freaks
me out. So we're in the, it was southbound, mm-hmm. and we were between Division and Chicago Avenue.
Mm-hmm. What year is this?
This is 19, like, I'm going to say 95.
Great year.
Thank you. Oh, my God. Isn't that
scary?
That freaks me out, man.
Yes.
So, like, I'm running away from a train fire, and
Kevin's at Northwestern Memorial.
Mrs. Powell is pushing Kevin out.
Pretty much. No, that wasn't my... that was year six. I don't... It just sounded like a good year.
Oh. All right. Okay, good.
But I still was probably being pushed around as a little toddler.
Yeah, that's probably true. Yeah. So the train stops. Is it off? And did.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm in the front car, because I used to like to watch... The best part in the morning commute was to watch the... Because the train would stop, you know, unexpectedly, and I would get, like, freaked out when that would happen.
In between stops. That always bothers me, too. It's like, well, whoa. And they don't tell you anything.
Right.
It just sort of grinds to a halt, and then you're like, what? What's happening?
And they used to not have the computerized guy telling you what was going on.
Well, but it's not really detailed when they do.
But they used to have a guy, a real guy, in the train. They had the conductor, not the motorman, but the conductor had a little microphone deal, right? And he was in, like, one of the center cars.
Mm-hmm.
And he was the guy who did a...
Mm-hmm.
Next stop, Belmont. Next stop, Belmont.
And you never understood exactly what he was saying.
No, it was sometimes very unclear.
Change it up, Belmont. Good day. We all did. I think the thing's on fire.
Oh, gosh.
So, all right. So we stop, and I'm looking out in front, and I don't see anything.
Washington and Wells.
See, now that's a computerized guy.
That's clear.
A computerized guy. See, now I don't even like that because I liked that there was another human being on board, mm-hmm. that there was one other guy other than the motorman who was there.
It's reassuring.
That if something happened, he could call somebody,
mm-hmm.
right? But now it's just the motorman. And so my story tells you everything you need to know about that particular motorman on that particular morning. So the guy comes out of they stop. The train stops, and we're just in the tunnel, and I'm looking forward,
mm-hmm.
and it's just nothing but the darkness of the tunnel and those little lights that look like you're at a lawn party somewhere, it was those little like light bulbs along the way. They've been there since 1910,
mm-hmm.
and and everybody's just sitting there looking at each other. The motorman comes out of his little box, opens the door, and walks out onto the catwalk. That is along, which I didn't even realize existed, that you can walk out. There's like a little walkway that you can walk on,
mm-hmm.
on the right side of the train. So he's gone. So we're sitting there waiting.
Oh, weird.
Waiting. And I'm thinking, well, he's going to go. He's going to walk out. Maybe he was changing a light bulb. I don't know. He had to do something.
At this point, you had no idea there was a fire.
Until people came running up the tracks from behind us, from cars behind us, pounding on the side, screaming, "There's a fire." And then the smell of the smoke hit.
And you're underneath.
Yes.
This isn't
This is directly underneath Elm Street, as it turns out, because I learned out because I came up by Gibson's, which is really something.
Perfect.
It was a perfect moment for me. It's a perfect moment. So we everybody decided to kind of come out, mm-hmm. and we went down that walkway toward away from the fire, which is the back of the train. This is like a 6-car train, mm-hmm. and apparently that was in back. Brakes caught fire, and so we're going out. The smoke is starting to fill up in the tunnel. People are screaming. People are doing it. It was just a bad moment. And then there's like these stairs that lead up and out, because they have these escape hatches throughout the subway system. And those are grates you walk over. You ever walk, mm-hmm. like down State Street and there's grates there, and you're like, what is that?
Right.
And sometimes you hear the train or feel the train rushing underneath.
You feel the wind kind of coming up as the train passes.
So if we walked over those, we'd see you underneath
that? That would be, yes. Me or a heroin addict sleeping with a rat as his pillow. One or the other.
Oh.
And so people just started going up there. And so I called I get to a payphone and I called my my boss. Mm-hmm. This is back when you had to have a payphone to do that. And I'm like, hey, there's a train fire. And he's like, you're late. Get in here.
Ooh, ouch.
So I got
wasn't messing around.
I got there and I was on the air. I was did the 9 to 11 in the morning shift. And I looked at my coat. I was wearing a jean jacket. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's because it was 1995.
It's like a jean jacket. That's and strong. Were you doing double denim or just the top denim?
You mean the Wisconsin tuxedo? Yeah, I probably was doing double denim now that I think about it. And my entire right arm and jean jacket totally filled with like this black soot from the walls of the subway. I didn't even realize.
Oh.
But then I thought, well, why am I going to work? I should just walk over to Gibson's and, you know, have a drink. But I did. But it was 9 in the morning. It wasn't open. So that's why I had
to go. They didn't do breakfast then.
And then I'm watching the coverage on the news. So, you know, I'm like, hey, I was just on this train. And it was the top story that morning because this thing was happening. Nobody got seriously hurt. But there was a huge ambulance response. And these two people who were sitting right where I was standing when mm-hmm. I got off
mm-hmm.
were being pulled out by an ambulance. And they were right behind me on the little walkway.
Mm-hmm.
They must have doubled back and gotten back on the train for the insurance purposes. That is the only thing I can think of.
Were there any visible signs of injury or smoke inhalation?
They were shallow breathing on the gurney as they were being taken away, which I thought was kind of interesting. And I'm like, hey, wait a second. I wanted to call for insurance fraud, but no one seemed to care at the moment.
You know, sometimes what they do is they lock the bus doors for the CTA when they have a little minor accident, make sure nobody jumps on the bus.
Right. Exactly right. Hmm.
That doesn't seem so safe.
Yeah. So that was my brush with death. The CTA.
So did you ever see the flames or was it the smoke?
No, they just smelled the
and
smoke.
And was it really?
It was a brake fire.
Right,
so.
Right. So it was far back on the train.
It was
behind
the last
you?
Train. It was like the sixth car. So we were, I was never technically in danger.
Yeah.
But I like to claim I was. But those people, I think, actually sued the CTA and were able to, they got something out of it. I'm like, what did I do? Why didn't I do that?
I lost the joy of living as a result of that.
Mm-hmm. My jean jacket was damaged.
Yeah, how was the jean jacket after that? Real smoky, I bet. You go into work, they're like, what is going on?
I know, I have like soot on my face and stuff because your hands are like, because they have like a handrail down there that you can hold on to.
Oh, you can't hold on to the handrail.
Well, what else are you going to do? You want to fall on the third rail? Is that what you want to do?
You can't do that. You got to.
Is this when your hypochondria started?
No, this was at the height of my hypochondria. So imagine how exacerbated it was.
Claim that.
I've gotten over it. I've got this.
Really? It sounds like you haven't.
Yeah, I've gotten over it.
You're still working through this nightmare.
Yeah.
Whew. That sounds horrible, but did I tell you how people stand really close to you when you're holding on and you're like, hey, there's plenty of space.
That's the worst.
Isn't it?
And you're on your way to and from the Beyonce show. Is that what you were doing?
No, I'd go to school taking the blue line sometimes. I went to UIC.
Oh, you know what? You start high school next week, right? Isn't that true?
No, I could never take it to high school, please. That would involve like two buses and two trains. That was too much.
All right. Well,
Mom, you have to drive me. Wake up at 5:30 in the morning.
She'd just come in from work at 4:30 in the morning.
I know. Yeah. She's a good cat.
Yeah. All right. Anyway, the point
that's
is
pretty harrowing
that, that is where that's
Rose Strong.
Yeah, Rose Strong. I made it through. And my God. I mean, we're close to, it's more than 20 years ago now.
So did you have the guy, you can hear him say, there's a fire on board?
No, no one ever told us.
The guy just left.
Well,
that
guy left. He did tell you, you just couldn't understand him.
No. Where was that guy?
Yeah.
Where was
he? When you needed him.
Yeah,
when you needed him most.
Hey,
get the hell off the train, it's on fire! What are you doing on the train? Get the hell off the train! Next stop, Belmont!
Yeah.
Walk there.
Change the purple line and buy that.
I know, and you always look.
I love that guy.
You look next to the person on the train, you're like, what did they say? Is this going express?
Right, everyone What's tries to interpret stop? It together.
Right.
And you're like, I don't understand.
Yeah, I caught a couple words.
Look.
Almost is like the happy birthday at Gibson's, too.
I know, that one. A boo, a woo, whatever they say. That was quite something to survive, though, Ro.
Yeah, I know.
Well
I know.
Done. I mean, that's, you know, few people could prevail in that situation yes. with such so calmness that, so that I'm sure so you exhibited.
If you right now are listening to us on the app, on the WGN app in the train, I'm just saying that that's, you
thank
know,
you.
Just think about that. It's all different now. Things are so much better.
Uh-huh. They are.
We should take a trip on the CTA on a train together.
Yeah, that's all right.
Yeah, just see what it's like.
That's okay.
Group event.
Took me years before I could get back on a train.
I bet. Time. I would have nightmares over something like that. That's scary.
That was just not.
Very.
That was just not right.
I know, but it's a pretty good story. Everyone was safe, right?
All right. All right, we'll be, do you want to tell us what's happening on the roadways? WGN everywhere. You're listening on the app. This is the White Sox are playing baseball on the radio. Mm-hmm. It's a Rokan show with Anna DeVlantis heard here every afternoon between 3 and 7.
Mm-hmm. Always available on the stream as well.
That is correct.
Streaming hard.
That's right.
That's how we speak when we're on the stream.
That's right.
Is it really? Hey, coming up after 6 o'clock, we got the news with Judy at 6. And then after that, we're going to be joined by the Stone Pony, Alex Stone, who is an ABC News.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you know this if you listen to the program.
Enjoy listening.
ABC News reporter. He is an aviation expert for ABC News, and he will tell us how the dude stole the plane.
Crazy story. Just a crazy story. How did that happen?
Still unclear. And then we've got some more Omarosa tape in the 6 o'clock hour for you as well.
She's still talking.
Yeah.
Dishing.
Oh, my God. And she's good. And a special drunk Trump treatment of Omarosa's tape of the president's surprised phone call. Where he's clearly.
It's great acting.
He's clearly like, oh, what? You got fired? Oh, I had no idea.
I would have loved for you to have stayed or something like that. It would have been.
I was like, oh, shucks.
I don't love them firing you.
That's it.
Yes. I don't love you leaving.
Leaving.
What does that mean? It's like he's an awkward liar.
Mm-hmm.
That's the problem. When he does, he kind of gets caught in his own thing.
Mm-hmm.
You can tell. A couple times today when he was at Fort Drum in mm-hmm. New York, when he was addressing the 10th Mountain Division and signing the new military budget there that was named after John McCain. He didn't mention John McCain's name or any reference to him whatsoever because his enemies shall be his enemies forever. And then he turned on the press while he was there, too, turned on the media. And he got the United States Army personnel to applaud the fake news, that he's fighting the fake news, which should be a little scary.
Yeah.
Because, they swear an oath,
mm-hmm.
as does the president. Duty bound to the Constitution. There seems to be a First Amendment in there.
Yes.
Right?
We forget about that.
Yeah. So it made me very uncomfortable. But, so many things do now. I don't know what to do. But the president he's got that thing when he does lose himself on the script, as he did today,
mm-hmm.
in that speech to the Army. And then he goes off about the Space Force. He gets totally lost in it. And then what are we going to do? There's bad guys out in space. They're trying to get to us. We're trying to get to them. And, we're going to be making a lot of arrests real soon. Like, what are you talking about? Because he lost himself on the prompter and he couldn't mm-hmm. get back. So he just starts doing anything to say anything to get back.
Did he do that walk thing where he walks around and
we do have that moment?
Tries to get applause.
Yeah, hold on. Yeah, here you go.
We are also proudly reasserting America's legacy of leadership in space. Our foreign competitors and adversaries have already begun weaponizing space, developing new technologies to disrupt vital communications, blind satellites, and you look at what they're doing.
Boom, boom.
They've given me rundowns. I've seen things that you don't even want to see, what they're doing and how advanced they are. We'll be catching them very shortly.
You're right. There's totally right? more. Like, okay.
Anytime he trips.
There's nothing on the prompter. This is going to be great, bigger and better than ever.
Right. It's a trick. Words. Listen to that. When he trips over his own words, he wants to make the fall look graceful, and then he just starts making things up. It's really unbelievable. I mean, it happens 100% of the time. Because a prompter is tough to stay on.
Yeah, it is. And then sometimes it says something you might not grasp yet, so you need a second or two to sort of understand where it's going.
Mm-hmm. Yet when you're the president of the United States, you think you could recover.
Without making stuff up, you mean?
Yes.
See, that's the thing. So his natural instinct is to boast heavily.
We're going to catch him soon.
Right.
When like one in your rocket ship?
Exactly.
How's that going to happen?
What?
All right. This is... I've got one right now. It's called the Millennium Falcon.
Damn it!
All right. Judy Pilak has got the WGN News. This is WGN Radio everywhere, streaming live from Chicago. Judy. End of launches right here on 720 WGN or WGN Everywhere, streaming live to the world from Chicago.
Mm-hmm. Hello, world.
And Stone Pony is joining us out. Stone from ABC News.
Hello, world.
let me just ask you a question here. Dude stole a plane at Seattle Tacoma International Airport. How did that happen?
Well, planes don't take keys, and it's not like the key fob to your car. So if you can find your way into a plane and you know what to do, you start that puppy up, and that's exactly what he did. He says that he had no pilot training, at least that's what he was telling air traffic control, and there's no indication that he did ever have any pilot training. He claimed that it was video games that he learned how to fly on. We can guess, Microsoft Flight Simulator, that sort of thing. But this was a guy, and this is really where the debate is going to come in now, and we've heard from SeaTac Airport. They say they're already having discussions on this. They think every airport, you know, O'Hare, Midway, everybody's going to be talking about what can be done now. That you've got a guy who was credentialed to be there, had a legitimate reason to be around planes. He was a baggage handler. He was a tow operator pushing the planes back. He was intimately involved in the operations at the airport. He had gone through all the background checks. He had passed all of those, had not raised any flags, all of his coworkers to a T, and family members saying he was a cool guy, that he was relaxed and seemed fine with everything, and then goes and carries this out, that he is somebody who would have full access to planes, and whether he watched YouTube or played video games, figured out how to start up the engines, taxi out that plane, and take off rolling down the runway.
He told the during the radio traffic, they've now provided the transcripts, and they've told people what he said. And one of the things he said was, I got a lot of people that care about me. It's going to disappoint them to hear that I did this. Have we learned any more about why he did this?
You know, and that's why the FBI is interested to find out what the NTSB is going to hear. They hope they'll be able to hear something off of the cockpit voice recorder. They got portions of it, pieces of it after the plane crashed, and they've got the entire data recorder, which was burned and mangled, but they got the full thing. So that was flown back today to D.C. They're going to start analyzing that. They want to know, one, was he saying anything when he wasn't talking to air traffic control, because he didn't tell ATC anything of why he was angry, why he was upset, why he was doing this. So was he ranting about his wife? He was in his late 20s. He was married. Was he ranting about his job at Alaska Airlines? And did he try to crash when he crashed? That he was doing the crazy barrel rolls and the dives and you know, things that you wouldn't typically see an airliner do? That did he just take it a little bit too low and then hit the tree line and he was done there? Or was he trying to plow the plane into the ground at that point? They'll try to look, was he pulling up on the stick? What was he doing? And try to answer some of that. But he put that plane to the max, and then he apologized to family members, even to the air traffic controller, saying, I'm sorry if this messes up your day.
Do you get the sense he thought he was going to survive this?
No, because he talked about that he didn't know how to land, that that was never part of his plan, that he told the air traffic controller that landing, he wasn't prepared to do that, that was never part of it. So the belief among FBI agents is that this was a one-way trip. Mm-hmm. This was a suicide mission from the beginning, that he said in the recordings of, I'm just a guy who has a screw loose and I didn't know it until now, and then goes on to apologize to his family. So, no, it seems like he knew it was going to be over. He had the F-15s following him. If he had tried to go toward downtown Seattle or Joint Base Lewis-McChord, no doubt they would have taken action. They kind of let him do his thing. They were watching him. They broke the sound barrier to get there, taking off out of Portland. He was heading south. They were heading north. They got to him, and in the end, he either on his willingly or not willingly crashed on his own, and then they did not have to shoot him down.
So they had to come all the way out of Portland to get to him.
Yeah.
And
the reason why they did that, just real quickly, was because he was heading south, they thought he was going to Joint Base Lewis-McChord. So the decision was made from NORAD that the fastest crew to get there was going to be coming south, from the south, heading north to try to intercept
him. Did they come out of McChord, those F-15s?
No, they came out of the Portland area, right in Portland, whatever the base is there.
Yeah, it's interesting because that aircraft would have to break the sound barrier. That's going to be a fuel loss. I mean, those guys stayed with them the whole time. Did they have to refuel while they were up there?
You know, I don't think so. He was only airborne for an hour, though, so okay. He wasn't up for all that long. Long time if you think about somebody who doesn't know how to fly,
yes.
And he's flying an airliner, but they only had to go alongside of him for an hour.
That's the weird part of this whole thing. Anyone who's seen that video sees the aerial maneuvers he was carrying out, and they're just incredible, so much so that the CEO of the Horizon Air, I guess it is, said he can't, I don't know how he learned how to do those things. Is that the kind of thing you could learn from just a flight simulator?
Yeah, I mean, it seemed like he was messing around. The thing that it really tells me, going back to the nerdiness of aviation, is, wow, what that Bombardier Q400 was able to do and not break apart, not lose control. That he was able to do nosedives and at the last minute pull up right before hitting the water and go straight back up.
Nice.
He was able to fly inverted and do barrel rolls, and the plane never went out of control. And you don't think of an airliner being able to do barrel rolls, but he was doing it, and without any practice other than video games apparently, that the plane didn't have any problems. So that even the airline is saying, wow, that the plane withstood all of that, but that he was able to carry it out without much training. Again, he said it was just all playing around on video games, but except for knowing where the lever was to put the landing gear down, he didn't know how to land.
Yeah. That's the hardest part of Flight Simulator, by the way. That's the whole point of that. It's fairly easy to take off.
Thank God there were no passengers on board, because think about that.
Well, and that early on, nobody knew if there was anybody on board.
Right.
There was this concern that, one, it was terrorism. Was there anybody on board? When he first taxied out to the runway, taking it from a cargo/maintenance area, air traffic control kept saying on the frequency, I don't want to say yelling because they're so calm, but Horizon, identify yourself. Horizon, identify yourself. As this Horizon Air aircraft was rolling down the runway and took off. And then shortly after that, he made contact with them, and then they began to have their conversation. But the air traffic controllers, extremely calm through the entire thing, saying, Rich, hey, let's figure out how we're going to get you down. You probably see a runway over there. Let's try to line up for that.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, no, not ready to do it yet, and not going to do it. But they tried to, they vectored him out into areas where there was no population. This is a once-in-a-million incident for that air traffic controller, but he stayed incredibly calm and tried to end the situation peacefully.
He had to have some planning to this, because he had to be able to know how to work the radio. He had to know what the frequencies were for the radio to be able to contact. I mean, there's beyond just Flight Simulator, because it's, there's more to an active cockpit than Flight Simulator does some things automatically for you. And this, he would have had to have planned out what it was he had to know to do, in order.
Yeah, you would think. Unless he powered up the plane and then the frequency was already set in from the previous flight, hard to know. And we don't know. But once he was able to get into the plane, he had to have some knowledge to be able to start up the engines, and, you know, it's something that you can learn online fairly easily. And with put that with whatever he learned from these video games, if it was Flight Simulator or something else, of, you know, stall speeds and that sort of thing, and just kind of generally how to do it, he was able to carry it out. And but how do you stop this from happening again? And you make the argument of, okay, well, there should be a code that pilots have to put in the cockpit, or some kind of key card to get in the plane. If you had a key card to get in the plane, pilots are going to need it. Maintenance crews are going to need it. The flight attendants might need it. Cleaning crews are going to need it. At what point do you say, okay, these men and women won't carry out something like this, but a baggage handler would? And there have been plenty of cases. There was one today in Utah of pilots committing suicide in jets. There have been globally airline pilots who have done it with planes full of passengers that happens to them too, where something in their life is going on. They decide that's the way they're going to go out. Or a member of the maintenance crew would have to have access, could do it as well. Except for just having faith in humanity that somebody's not going to do this, there really doesn't seem like on the surface a good way to stop humans from committing suicide in the cockpit of a plane.
Right. That Egypt Air flight, people always have speculated that was a suicide.
Yeah, but then there was German Wings going right into the side of a mountain, and today this private jet that the pilot had just had a domestic violence situation with his wife, and he plowed the plane into his home. His wife survived. A boy who may have been their son survived as well. The pilot died. But, you know, even just in the last couple of days, there have been two suicides by airplane. One of them was a pilot who belonged in that cockpit.
Yeah. Wow. All right. All right. Thank you very much, Alex. We're going to leave that on
thank
that cherry note right there. How about that?
Have a good night.
All right, thanks,
Alex.
There he goes, Alex Stone, ABC mm-hmm. News.
If only you could keep people who have been pre-screened from security areas like the airport or the Situation Room and the Omarosas of the world who probably don't belong there. This man here probably didn't belong in the airport. Or maybe it's a mental health issue in this case, and that they just no one saw it before it got to be too big.
And that's often the case, right? Yeah. Whether it's a mass shooter or situation like this. I mean, he seemed intent not on hurting anyone else.
Yeah, he did.
Yeah, or at least not intentionally hurting anybody else.
Chief of the Sheriff's Department calls him suicidal and is identifying him as, you know, having issues with mental health, potentially.
Yes. Well, I mean, but he said as much, right? He said he had a screw loose. That's what he said on the record when he was talking to air traffic control.
Yeah, but it didn't seem like there was some precipitating incident, you know, like a divorce pending or something. It seemed like maybe a long time battle with it. We don't know, but it doesn't seem as if one incident necessarily triggered this.
Well, bad time to figure out you can't land when you get up there.
Oh, wait a second.
Hold on a second. But they were going to talk him down.
Yeah.
That was the one amazing thing that was going on there. Do we have any of that from the air traffic control talking to him, the talking him down
right.
part.
Where Alex Stone just said they were trying to identify nearby runways and saying, hey, you know, you could take this down.
Damn it, Andrew! People's lives are at stake here!
Average, don't say stuff like that.
Nah, I just told you, I don't want to hurt no one. I just want you to whisper sweet nothings into my ear. Sorry, my mic came off. I threw up a little bit. You know, I I'm sorry about this. I hope this doesn't ruin your day.
Oh, boy.
Well, because when he said that people's lives are at stake, that's when the F-15s would have shot him out of the air.
Right. Well, and that's where that air traffic controller had an amazing sense of what to say back. You know, hey, man, he just give him credit. Wow. He's playing the role of therapist as well as air traffic controller there.
And he's doing barrel rolls. That's going to make him the plane is not obviously is designed to withstand that, but it's not really designed to do. That's not what that plane's about.
No.
That plane's not about doing high G acrobatics, which is what that is. And that was something, man. That is just to weird. And the other piece of this too is that the social media reaction, because people are really enjoying watching the plane going around in the air.
Yeah, it was almost until it took me a while to realize that this man had died in this. It felt as if he knew what he was doing, or he was just doing a crazy takeoff of a plane and then landed it somewhere. But
yeah, it was like a wacky story on the internet, but
yes,
it really wasn't.
But it really
was a potentially very dangerous thing. All right. But I'll tell you what is a wacky story on the internet is Omarosa and the audio there.
Oh, boy.
And we've given it some of the treatment here. We're going to get to that coming up in just a few minutes as the Rob Khan Show with Anna DeVlantis continues on WGN Radio, everywhere, streaming live from Chicago, all over the planet Earth. It's very nice.
Thanks.
You're welcome.
You want me to keep going?
Yeah, just kidding. Although, you might, you know, since we are on the World Wide Web exclusively for this portion of the radio broadcast, so the radio station is broadcasting the Chicago White Sox. We're just broadcasting us. Maybe we'll choose a destination city somewhere.
Yay!
And you'll look up the traffic, and you'll do the traffic there.
I'll go there. I'll go on remote.
No, no.
Yeah.
You just do it on the interwebs.
I think we should pick a place where there are a lot of Chicago transplants, you know, because we get high listenership in those areas.
Like Arizona.
Yeah.
Scottsdale.
Yeah. Perfect. Yeah.
I got to go there.
There's some traffic out there. Well, so they could use you, Violetta.
Right, and it's
hitting rush hour there, right?
Right, it's 4:25 there, so
they need to know.
Wait, summer
5:25, right?
Wait, summer beaches, yeah, it's 4:25 out there.
So they may need to know.
Whatever it is, I've never been.
I want to go.
You've never been to Phoenix?
No.
Have you ever been to anywhere other than Slovenia?
I've actually never really gone to the West Coast. West.
You were just in Las Vegas, though.
Yes, that was my first West. But Las Vegas is like its own little, I mean, that could be anywhere.
That is very true.
It does feel like
that. They would like to remind you of that. In whatever hotel you're in, they'd like to remind you, this is where you are, and there's no exit. There's no getting out now.
You always end up right back at the slot machines.
Interesting. Very interesting. When Violetta said she was going to Las Vegas, I worried for Las Vegas.
Vegas, baby.
Yeah, I was more concerned about, and they've seen a lot of her ilk before.
Yes. Yes.
I was actually tame in
Vegas. I thought you were going to break it.
No, please. No.
All right.
It was a lot of fun. I got to meet Mel Brooks.
Oh, that's right, but you didn't know who he was.
Nope. Did not know who he was, but I knew he was important.
This thousand-year-old man.
I knew he was important. He was very nice. And then I Googled him, and then wish I would have talked to him for a little longer.
Yeah. Now, was he talking to you?
Yeah, he was talking to me.
He's chatting you up a little bit?
No, not like that. His kids or handlers were next to him. I'm like, no, a couple more minutes, please.
His kids are 90. I just want to point that out.
So then how did you get in this conversation with him if you didn't even know who he was?
Well, everyone around us, we were at the Bellagio. What's it called?
Bellagio.
Because there's also Bellagio on Central, so I was...
That's a restaurant. Yeah, that's separate. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Not related.
My dad has his New Year's Eve parties there. Okay. So anyway...
I know we have a little extra time on the internet,
but not that much.
Yeah.
Yeah, so he was coming out of a private dining experience there, and I was just sitting on the couch, you know, having a drink.
A private dining experience at the Bellagio.
Or poker tournament, yeah.
Okay, all right.
And then after that, he came out, and everyone was, you know, kind of looking at him. I'm like, who's this guy? And they're like, that's Mel Brooks. And I'm like, who's this guy? And they're like, that's the guy performing at the Wynn. I'm like, what's he do? Anyway, so then I just went up to him. I'm like, hi, Mel, it's my first time in Vegas. And he's like, oh, very nice. I'm like, I hear you're performing at the Wynn. He's like, yeah, thanks for coming. I'm like, no, I didn't go, but...
This generally is the kind of conversation that one has with a young girl who's got a yard of a margarita in her hand. You know, where they have that, like, vuvuzela thing that's filled with a drink that they walk around.
And then blow into obnoxiously they're drunk.
Yeah, that's, like, that thing. I don't know where they get it. There's, like, certain bars up and down the strip where they get it, and they are allowed to walk with it on the strip.
See, a certain demographic finds those. Because every time I've been to Vegas, I'm like, where do these keep coming from?
I know.
Sure.
No,
that crowd just somehow seeks those out and finds them. Because any time I've been there, I'm like, where do these just appear?
Yeah, no one knows. Exactly. Those people.
The tube drinks?
Hi, Mel. I've got a Vuvuzela full of a margarita.
You want a sip?
I love you. I don't know who you are.
I didn't know who you were, but now I do. And I love you.
So then,
had you ever seen had you ever seen Blazing Saddles or Young Frankenstein or?
I can't say that I have. No,
the original producers.
Yeah, well, now I know his wiki page. I mean,
yeah,
but no, I haven't seen any of that even since I met him.
Okay. Oh God. Great story.
But he was really, really nice.
Yeah.
And then he wished me a happy 21st birthday. I'm like, no, it's not my birthday. It's just my first time in Vegas.
All right, that's the best part of the story.
Yeah. You've been cuffing that this whole time.
He just wished you a happy 21st.
Yeah, because you had the Vuvuzela drink, didn't you? You had the big tube plastic drink.
No, but it was kind of cold out, so I just bought a Las Vegas sweater, a zip-up over my cute...
Oh, God.
Outfit.
Over my cute outfit.
Yeah, so I had to take it off, obviously, for the picture.
Uh-huh.
I'm like, hold this, handler.
Oh, my gosh.
And would you mind taking a picture?
Oh, I'd pay to see how this whole thing unfolded.
And then he was like, okay, it's going to be $1 for that. I'm like, oh, you're so funny, Mel.
Classic joke from
Mel. Oh, Mel.
Classic Brooks. Mel.
You're too much, Mel.
Yeah.
I'm like, where are you going?
I'd like to follow you. This is why everybody should have a personal bodyguard. Even an inflatable one or something. I don't know. Whatever it happens to be.
Was anyone near him talking into it, like holding their ear and talking into some ear, like a little mouthpiece?
No, his people that were with him were like holding my sweater and my drink and then took the picture.
This story is really more about Violetta.
Yeah, it is. You know what? And it's a crime, really.
Well,
what young women can get away with in America. I mean, this is where we, this, you know, we talk
I'm
about.
I'm a privileged white woman.
Yes,
what was that? Quote?
I know. This is right. You can't take me to jail.
I'm an all-American girl.
I'm a thoroughbred.
Thoroughbred white
I'm
woman.
I'm in a sorority.
Yeah.
yeah. Very clean, thoroughbred white girl.
Violetta had her last, the morning of last day there.
She should have been put in jail just for that cry. It's just disgusting.
It bothers you, Judy.
Between
it
really
that and
bothers
the,
me.
The guy that was taken off the United flight, I mean, they could compete for the most annoying cries.
Did you ever see The Graduate?
Yeah, I saw The Graduate.
The Graduate. Like Mrs. Robinson?
Yes, yes, yes.
That's his wife.
I know. Yes, I knew that.
What's her name?
But she has passed, I think, because I was going to, yeah, I looked that up.
She knows detail.
You know, a lot of times I call myself Mrs. Robinson.
Yeah. Yes. This is too much information. Oh my God!
Just as a joke, when
God, we're on the web, and I had no idea that this is the way the show was going to turn.
But
it turns out
it turns out like Violetta though, because some guy, you know, I'll be like, hey, they're like, hey, I'm, you know, Kurt, and I'm like, hey,
and I'm 30, and you're like, hey, Mrs. Robinson.
As a joke, I go, yeah, I'm Mrs. Robinson. And they're like, hey, Mrs. Robinson, nice to meet you. Like,
really?
I think most kids have seen that.
No, really? No. I
guess I'm ahead of the curve.
Yeah.
Oh, no, you're not.
Yes, I am. I saw it. Okay. I saw it a couple times, and then I saw Rumor Has It, which is about The Graduate.
Kind of, yeah. Okay. All right, then.
Mel Brooks, if you're listening, hi. I was the girl you met in Vegas.
Okay.
You're the only girl he's ever met in Vegas.
No one else said hi.
Cute girl you met in Vegas.
Clean thoroughbred.
I was a thoroughbred you met out there.
Do you have any of the all right. Here's what I promise, because I know Judy's gotta go, so we'll do the news with her. And then I want to play the full tape of her, of that woman from the young thoroughbred white girl who did not want to be arrested because she's a pretty clean white girl and didn't like that.
And she was in a sorority.
And then we're going to play the Omarosa and Donald Trump tape, and we've got a drunk Trump version of that. And then hopefully...
We'll have enough
stuff that'll keep Violetta from talking. That's my greatest, most fervent hope. Right now, Judy's going to keep Violetta from talking by doing the WGN News.
I'm Judy Pilak in the WGN Radio Newsroom. This is the stuff that matters on Chicago's very own 720 WGN. I'm Mrs. Robinson. I'm going to start saying that.
A little something here.
Let me see how it sounds. I'm Mrs. Robinson in the WGN Radio Newsroom.
Kevin, watch out.
Oh, Mrs. Robinson. I believe you're trying to seduce me.
Mm-hmm. Turned into confession hour here.
Yeah. That's what it did. Once we get on the web, all hell breaks loose. Yeah. I think we have learned something here. Mm-hmm. We'll be doing this again tomorrow afternoon.
Mm-hmm. And I'm very uncomfortable with it. I'll be honest with you.
Tomorrow, do we all?
Kevin's
the others?
Turn tomorrow.
Right.
Oh, jeez.
To go yeah, around the
let's
table.
Just rename this segment "True Confession."
Deepest, darkest secret. Your turn.
Oh God.
You don't
oh God.
Know. Ro, you'll be last.
Yeah. I got some good ones. Yeah. I somehow feel though in my 5 decades on the planet.
Yeah.
I still am. Or I guess I don't know how that works, but I still have fewer, deeper, and darker secrets after all the things I have ever done in my life mm-hmm. than Violetta does at half my age.
In a
I
weekend.
Don't know.
Yeah. I somehow
that
feel
is not,
that's the
I
case.
Don't think
I'm an
so.
Open book.
As Violetta, how was your weekend? Why do you want to know how my weekend was? It's like, would you kill
secretive.
Somebody this weekend?
She is just very secretive.
No, I'm not. I'm an open book.
Mm-hmm.
I wear my heart on my sleeve, and everybody knows everything about me. Just check out my Instagram.
You have multiple wardrobe changes in your car at all times.
Well, you got to be ready for whatever.
Oh, no, like, that's very suspicious.
Throws at you.
I think so.
Yeah,
that is suspicious. Passport, yeah. She's got different credit cards
yeah.
in her purse.
Exactly.
I don't think her real name is Violetta.
What if we find out the Russians actually sent her?
Only to my P.O. box, not my house address.
Yeah, you have a P.O. box.
And you know Boris.
That sums it up.
Killed by association.
All right. First of all, speaking of Violetta, we promised this was so we should play it. This was the girl from last week. This sort of is a little bit of what Violetta was heading toward earlier in the program before we reminded her that she would not be in the same sorority as this girl. This is the girl that got arrested for a DUI in South Carolina, right? This is in South Carolina.
Mm-hmm.
She blew through a stop sign. And she did not want to go to jail when the police officer got up, realized, hey, she's drunk, pulls her out, breathalyzes her. She's about double over, a little bit more than double the legal limit
yep.
in the state of South Carolina. And she said, you know, she's too pretty to go to jail.
I was an American high school student. I was an All-American cheerleader. I mean, this is the beat my whole life. My whole life. I miss a beat. You pulled me over for driving too fast. I mean, you ruined my whole career. Please, I've never been arrested. I'm coming to jail. Please, I don't want to know what it's like. I don't want to know what it's like. I'm a pretty girl. Please, don't make me go in there.
I'm a pretty girl. That's the best excuse you can use in life.
And I never missed a beat.
Oh, is that what she was saying?
That's yeah. what she was saying. I never missed a beat.
Honors from a high accredited university.
She missed that stop sign going 60 miles per hour.
Did we have the part where she talks about being a thoroughbred, which is not, I think it's a...
Yeah, she said very clean, thoroughbred.
She said,
white
yeah,
girl.
Right
I don't
girl.
Want to know what it's like.
See if she works.
Even the cop had to say, what does that mean? What does that have to do with anything? She's like, you're a cop. You should know what that means.
Oh, no.
I've seen all the videos where you're beating up on the black people. I know.
I'm white. Let
I'm
me
white.
Go.
I'm white. I'm pretty.
Did I mention I was in a sorority?
That's the best. Mm-hmm. I might get my ringtone.
Okay, but at least you went that way and not like, my dad's going to call you.
Sorry, my phone's ringing.
She did say her partner's a cop.
Just coming from my pocket in the middle of the day.
Dude, what is that? Somebody in trouble?
Who's calling you? What are they saying?
Oh, it's my phone, guys. Gotta take this call.
Is it on speaker?
And actually, I just got an email. Don't worry about it. We should all make that the ringtone for Violetta, is what it should be.
Oh, come on.
Violetta's calling.
Because then the drama on the phone would actually be less than the ringtone.
Right,
so
that's
it sort of
true.
Prepares you.
Well, I don't know if that's true.
I'm not sure.
I don't know if that's true. Because you, know, you get a phone call from Violetta in the middle of the night. Something weird is happening.
Yes, you do.
Yeah, that's the one thing that
just
I have
inviting you guys out
yeah.
to the party.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Hey!
All right. Okay. Now on to... And now on to Omarosa from there.
Oh, boy.
Because they're in the same category somehow.
Yeah, somehow, some way.
Madness.
Sort of the... It's, right. Yes, exactly.
Crazy train.
So the... So Omarosa... drops a bunch of tapes today. This is a, I gotta tell you, the mm-hmm. White House, this, forget the Mueller investigation, forget about Paul Manafort, forget about all of that. They're like, what does she have? That's gotta be, that has got to be, it's sort of like the, she may end up, which is so strange if this happens. She may be the tipping point here. Because now everybody's ever had a conversation with her has to assume she was recording it, and God knows what they said. Right? Because you know there's people in the White House who are like, that man is crazy.
Well, they're...
You know he's crazy.
Right. And it involves his sons. It involves his daughter. It involves... I mean, she says, apparently, that one of the tapes says, has the president calling Trump Jr. A really bad word that I don't think I can say on the stream, an F-up for releasing those emails about the Trump Tower meeting.
So this is... Senior talking about Junior.
Yes, about his son saying, what a, you know what, for yes, releasing the emails about the Trump Tower meeting, like his head's in his hands over it.
Yeah, well.
And then there's more. There's more to come out on Ivanka and Jared. She says. I don't know what we trust about her.
All right, so here is Trump. This is the original version of what Omarosa was able to scope using her secret magic recording pen.
Marosa, what's going on? I just saw in the news that you're thinking about leaving. What happened?
General Kelly came to me and said that you guys wanted me to leave.
No, I nobody even told me about it. Nobody,
wow.
You know, they run a big operation, but I didn't know it. I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Damn it.
Yeah.
I don't love you leaving at all.
I don't love you leaving at all.
I think you could have stopped it. I don't love you.
Damn it!
Those are weird words.
You ever do that where it's like, oh, I can't make it. Damn it! Oh, darn it!
Darn it!
Oh, golly! God, I wish we could have just stayed working together forever.
I don't love missing it.
You're just the best. Kinda. Darn it! Oh, golly!
Yeah.
No! John Kelly fires you? No! And then we wondered, what would it sound like if it were drunk Trump? Because it's like a drunk phone call.
Marosa, what's going on? I just saw in the news that you're thinking about leaving. What happened?
General Kelly came to me and said that you guys wanted me to leave.
No, I nobody even told me about it. Nobody,
wow.
You know, they run a big operation, but I didn't know it. I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Damn it. I don't love you leaving at all.
Don't love you leaving.
Damn it. Damn it.
He couldn't even muster up enough, you know, kind of emphasis for the damn it part.
Yeah.
Damn it.
Oh, all right. And then, wait, though, I must say, this just happened a few minutes ago. This is the craziest damn thing. He's in New York. You know, he was at Fort Drum earlier today. He's meeting with the 10th Mountain Division.
Mm-hmm.
And then he got the 10th Mountain Division. I mean, this in and of itself, if anything should alarm you about Donald Trump personally, it's this. It's that he's the commander-in-chief of the United States Armed Forces, and he got the Army to applaud the whole, you know, I'm fighting the fake news thing.
Mm-hmm.
Which is really... first of all, it shouldn't have been a political event in front of the military. That's just the way that goes.
That's right.
And most presidents in the history of this country obey that rule. They don't make it about politics. They make it about the decorum of, you know, being the commander-in-chief. Not this guy.
No.
So then about within the last hour, he went to a fundraiser in New York. You heard... Judy mentioned this in her news, or mm-hmm. Mrs. Robinson, as she likes mm-hmm. referred to herself.
Her new name.
Mm-hmm. That he goes to New York, and he, he's in New York, to a fundraiser in New York. He's talking about we'll do this in real time. This is him talking about Governor Cuomo, who's Chris Cuomo's brother, right? Yes. These guys were all...
there's too many of them.
There's Andrew Cuomo, who's the governor, and you got Chris Cuomo.
And what's their relationship? Brothers?
They're brothers, yeah.
He's just, okay.
Right.
Younger.
Because they're the sons of Mario Cuomo, right? Mm-hmm. Longstanding New York politician.
Yep.
And so they... He's talking about whether he should have run for governor of New York.
And Cuomo wants to end your Second Amendment more than anybody. Cuomo wants to take away your Second Amendment. Now, he called me and he said, I'll never run for president against you. But maybe he wants to. Oh, please do it. Please. Please. Maybe he means it. The one thing we know, and they do say, anybody that runs against Trump suffers. That's the way it should be.
Oh, boy.
Wow. Wow. Wow.
Taking John McCain's name off the Defense Authorization Act and not even mention him when you speak for half an hour and all of the people around you speak for longer than that, not even mention him once. I mean, political issues aside, can't we just put them aside at that moment? This man is dying and you don't mention his name when you're speaking before the military. Any of these guys could find themselves in some situation. It just, he is a hero. He's an American hero. And I think he, and I know they are totally at odds as in politics, but you should put that aside there.
But, I mean, and people say, well, the left does the same thing. But he's the president of the United States. No one else in the country is the president of the United States. And isn't his job as president more important than his job as politician? Right?
I think. Absolutely.
I mean, isn't it? I mean, to say something like that? That deserves a drunk Trump.
Now, he called me and he said, I'll never run for president against you, but maybe he wants to. Oh, please do it. Please. Please. Maybe he means it. The one thing we know, and they do say, anybody that runs against Trump suffers. Yeah. That's the way it should be.
Oh, God. I had to do that because it makes me feel less scared. It probably shouldn't, but it does. Wow. Wow. All right. Well, I wish all of us the best of luck.
Even truly. Mrs. Robinson. And
even Mrs. Robinson.
And,
Yeah.
The rest of us who might have to do our hour of tomorrow, we're going to be talking about our deep, dark secrets. And I can't wait till we get to Roe.
Are we?
Yeah. I'm going to use the Violetta excuse.
Yeah.
Oh, everything is out there about me.
Open book.
Yeah.
Let's talk in generalities.
Yeah, don't name names.
So I knew this guy once.
Mm-hmm. A friend.
Friend. Who, once.
So who'd you hang out with this weekend? Someone. Where? Somewhere.
That's true. When we do ask Violetta that, how was your weekend?
True. We really don't get details. Ever.
Sure you do.
What'd you do this weekend?
Yeah, what did you do?
Yeah, what'd you do this weekend?
This weekend? I just can't remember sometimes.
Yeah, there you go. That's a good one. Can't remember.
What did I do? Yeah. I can't remember what I'm allowed to say, okay?
You see, that's the thing.
That's the point.
I can't remember what I'm allowed to say.
It's a lot of editing.
I grilled.
What did you grill?
Okay, I can talk about this. Yeah, we've got some vegetables, some corn. A nice
Who are you
ribeye?
Checking with when you're asking this question?
Right. My inner self.
She gets like a pet talk every Sunday night.
Got real.
All right, here's what you can and cannot say when you go on the radio tomorrow.
I know. I don't listen a lot.
I'm sure her minder tells her that exactly. Here's what you can and cannot say. This is what they need you to say.
Oh, I went to Serb Fest. Thanks for reminding me. Yes, I went to Serb Fest.
That's documented.
At Redwood Drive. It was a lot of fun. Mm-hmm. I actually ran into DJ Spaz and DJ Red that I told you guys about. And they were like, hey, thanks so much for mentioning us on the radio. And I was like, yeah, you know, look out for my peeps.
Look out for my peeps.
Hold on a second.
What is happening?
DJ Spaz and DJ Red?
Yeah, Red with two D's.
Yeah, DJ Spaz. Did anybody explain to DJ Spaz that Spaz is not...
It's about the techno lights and stuff. It's not, you know, it's like...
He's hoping that people have a spasmodic reaction to it?
Yes, yes. Yeah. That's exactly what he explained to me.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
I didn't know he had kids, too. He was there with his kids.
He's not...
in the club with the
kids? he's not DJ Epilepsy? I mean, why didn't he want to do that?
No. Well,
right.
DJ Spaz, that's it.
Didn't want to be, like, to send somebody into an epileptic incident by...
I think DJ Red got it from the Marlboro Reds. I think that's what he smoked.
when he was two in Serbia, that's what they gave him?
No, that's too expensive.
Okay.
All right. Okay, so Serbfest, we got that.
Yeah, Serbfest, it was really nice. Redwood Drive, right off the highway there.
Were there cabbage rolls?
There were not cabbage rolls, but there was a petting zoo, and I pulled up. I'm like, there's a petting zoo? They're like, no, that's the fresh meat right there. I'm like, what? I think it was a joke.
Did Spaz and Red perform?
I don't think
perform?
It was, actually.
What's that?
Did Spaz and Red perform?
No, it was folk music, you know, traditional singing. Because I left early. I didn't stay late.
This is actually DJ Spaz.
Yeah, I can tell his work.
Yes, so can I.
Here we go.
Everything is he Serbian?
This is a woman. That's a woman, actually.
No, the DJ.
Oh yeah, DJ Spaz is a guy.
Yeah. Is everything is all of the music that he plays? It's all in Serbian, I'm assuming.
Yes, that is
Serbian,
true.
Yeah.
Did he play at Serbfest?
No, he didn't. No, he's there with his kids and his lovely wife. They were going down the slide.